Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, Weekend Confirmed, everybody. This week we are back in the studio, not drinking anything other than water, but I tell you what, we are going to make sure and fuel your party because it's going to be a Weekend Confirmed drinking game episode.
I love the idea of people having a party and putting on Weekend Confirmed in the background.
Exactly.
Hey, you guys want to get this place fired up? Guys, talking about video games and kind of somber voices.
And then they like pass around the sheet. All right, here's every time they do this, drink. And you're like, well, shit, we're not even going to make it through the first 15 minutes.
Jim's not here yet. Don't put it on.
You know what? You know what's really crazy is if you put on our show and Wizard of Oz at the same time, how it crazy syncs up.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it's amazing. Weird.
Oh,
every
my God.
Episode.
Every episode.
It's the shoes.
It's the shoes.
Gotta get that in early. Hey, you already gave it away. Our special guest there, his voice you've already heard. That'd be Mike Schramm.
Hi. Hey. Sorry. I had something to say and I said it. Sorry.
He is, of course, of the official, unofficial Apple web blog, Joystick, his own podcast, which
Can I plug this?
Yeah.
I'm excited about this.
Of course.
It's not a new podcast. It's called The Incredible Podcast, Amazing Awesomeness. So it's real humble. We went low with it. But
there's
a
video coming to explain it.
Oh, okay, great. We just went video. Like it used to be an audio podcast.
Oh, you are?
Now we're on YouTube.
That's cool.
Yeah, we started on YouTube. So if you go to youtube.com/incrediblepodcast, we do the show every week live. So you can
watch
our video. In our underwear, right. We're completely naked the whole time. And we started doing other videos. So there's videos of me playing Slender on there. Like, have you played Slender?
What is Slender?
Did you cry and scream?
I was scared to death. I hate scary games.
What is it?
It's a free indie PC game that is super, super scary.
It's about like the skinny man that
Slender Man. Yeah, the Slender Man.
It takes the you're being stalked in the woods concept and like
it's free.
Ramps it up with like crazy music and ambiance, and
it's really cool.
Well, now that you've actually mentioned it, tell me more about it. Is it a first person game?
Is it a first person game?
It's kind of like first person puzzle. Sort of like an arcade puzzle type game, but you go into the woods, you show up in the woods, you have a flashlight, and the goal is to go find 8 pages in the woods. So you have to wander around these woods and look for pages. But the problem is that the Slender Man is after you.
There really is a Slender Man.
If the Slender Man gets close to you, that's game over.
Yeah.
So you got to wander around these woods and find these pages. And there's video of me online. I took video on the little screen and like I got scared out of my mind. Like I was almost crying by the end of it because I could not deal with the Slender Man. But hopefully it's very entertaining and it's over on our channel. So there's that. And then
the incredible podcast of
Amazing Awesome.
Amazing Awesome.
And if you go to youtube.com/incrediblepodcast, that's where our channel is. Oh, and I made soup muffins too. Do you know what soup muffins are?
I know what
soup is and I know what muffins are.
It's combined. You take a little bit of muffin like batter and you put it on the bottom of a muffin pan and then you put some soup in the middle and then you put muffin batter over the top and you cook that.
That's how you become not a Slender Man.
I mean, of course, have you guys had soup dumplings before?
No. Is this already a thing?
Soup dumplings are amazing. Soup dumplings. So imagine the same thing served. Oftentimes you get like a giant spoon and you like
of it's course like steamed?
Yeah. Mm. And you bite a little top off, bite out of the top to let some of the steam come out, and then you can eat the dumpling and you have like a little soup left over and you're oh my God, they're amazing.
That sounds like a smaller version of those sourdough bread balls with the clam chowder in it.
Hey guys, let's go get food.
Screw the podcast. So the good news is that we got derailed into food after talking about a game already.
Hey.
We got to a game. So anyway, that's my podcast. Thank you very much for letting me talk about that. Thanks. Thank you.
And we have two Jeffs.
Yeah, you already know that.
Yeah.
The Jeff Twins Wente.
The what?
Twins Wente.
Twins Wente.
That's me. That's me. How you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Can you do it, Jeffy, two times?
Jeffy two T's. Jeffy two N's. One TOE.
Forget about it.
Yeah. And Indie Jeff Mattis there at the end.
Yes,
of the
that is me.
All right, guys, here's what we have to look forward to today. There's, of course, lovely drama over Diablo 3 former and present developers getting into it on Facebook.
Wow.
We have the demise of OnLive. We want to talk about that and what it might mean for cloud gaming. We have... me talking about Madden 13.
Holy All cow. Up in the Madden.
Madden 13.
Are you ready for some football?
We're going to get back to some Darksiders 2 because you guys were really into Darksiders 2 and I felt like we didn't especially do a great job with it last week. And we've got other stuff here. We've got Jeff's played some more Papo EO. I want to hear how he's feeling with it. You know, it's interesting to have watched the evolution of comments on the internet where people originally were very into the artistic parts of it, but then started to feel a little bit put off by some of the design slips.
Yeah.
So I would definitely want to talk about that.
I've got your weekly quota of furries.
Also. And yeah, there you go. That would be Dustin Elysian Tail,
yeah.
Which is very cool because it came out of the Design Build Play contest from years ago, and it's still just like a couple of people put it together, which is very cool to actually see it come to fruition. So we have all kinds of stuff. We'll push forward right into Mike giving us his view. So we talked about Darksiders 2 last week, and I didn't. And the reason that I am coming back to it right away is that we sort of talked around it. We talked about death. We did, but you know what I didn't come away with was a good sense of Darksiders 1 had this initial response of, oh, it's like Zelda, but like modernized, which is cool.
Yeah.
And then somehow or other, it did manage to finally like break free of that weight around it and become, you know what, it's like that, and it's Darksiders, and it's really cool. And people, I think, finally started liking it. And I think the reason that it started, the reason it grew past and, you know, grew past just a sleeper hit of its time into something that's like really looked back on really fondly is because it did have enough of itself to identify with and it became, you know, its own thing. And I'm unclear from what we talked about last week whether the pastiche of everything that's in Darksiders 2 makes the same sort of impression.
I think the original thinking of Darksiders, the first Darksiders, was that, oh, it's like Zelda meets God of War, blah, blah, blah. You're ripping off all these other games. But the final word on it, I think, was who cares? Because it's fun. It
That's
was a really good game.
Yeah. Like the final word was who cares?
The final word was who cares if they're ripping people off or borrowing game types or whatever, because it was a really solid game. And I think Darksiders 2 is as well. It definitely, I think, is a bigger scale than the first one was. Like, they do a lot of things, and I'm not sure exactly what you guys hit on last week, but there's like inventory system now, and there's sort of quest in the game, and it's a little bit bigger story. Like, there's a little bit more
fat loots,
more plot. There's loots to it. Yeah. Like you're actually picking up different pieces of gear and you can upgrade that gear. And so it's a little bit bigger scale to it, but those Zelda type puzzles are what really have brought me back in on Dark.
And are they still there?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. That's what's most fun about it is the combat's there and it's fun. It's not extraordinary, but it's fun and solid. And the inventory and the questing system are all there and they're fun and solid. I wouldn't recommend them highly over any other game necessarily. But these puzzles where you just get like a room with a bunch of switches and you know, crazy things on the wall that you can climb up to, and you just have to figure out how am I going to use all these things in the right order to make it all work the way it's supposed to. Like, there's a lot of puzzle box element to the game where you just sort of walk in. I don't know. Is that what you guys thought?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I love that mechanic, and I love it in Zelda. I don't think, and I'm curious if you agree, I don't think it's quite as polished as your average Zelda game. Like, for the puzzle specifically, in Zelda, even when I'm stumped, I know what I'm supposed to be thinking about. I know the realm I'm in as far as I'm thinking about the puzzle in the way that is contextually appropriate. And in Darksiders, while that's the case most of the time, there are times when I just don't even know where I'm
what
supposed
to do. Yeah, I've had like, that exact same issue actually. Yeah. And it was true of the first game, but it's rare that I, you know, because usually when that happens, I'll bang my head against that wall for like 5 or 10 minutes and then put it down, come back, and I'll just, oh, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to do. Duh.
Yeah. Well, that's the case oftentimes in video games where you're overthinking it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that walking away period. But I think that also is just a layer of polish that Zelda games tend to get that this game just doesn't have the.
It's true. It's not a first-party Nintendo title. You're
right.
Exactly right. I mean, you can't really argue with the quality of Zelda games. But how many Zelda games have we seen in the past 5-6 years?
Exactly.
If we can get half the quality of a Zelda game, I'm thrilled. Like, that's good enough for me. So I'm not saying it's a bad game. I think it's an excellent game.
And I do too.
And Joe Mad's art is, I think a lot of people have a personal soft spot for that type of like big shouldered, like goofy caricature style art. And it's really cool.
So we talked about Joe Mad's art some last week. And one of the things that and this is the point that I brought up, was that it's interesting to me how if comic book artists were cool with Joe Mad's approach, but then McFarlane, we sort of doesn't really translate into video games very well.
I liked Amalur. I mean, I thought that his art worked well there.
That's true. His art was Amalur, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, I thought that worked well. But I think that there are certainly parts where it doesn't work.
You don't think so?
I would just guess that he had a overseeing.
Well, and they didn't. Functional. It doesn't have that. I mean, Amalur looks really good, but it doesn't have that like hyper detailed. You know, I mean, yeah, the silhouettes are probably his, and you know, some of the details and stuff. But it doesn't strike me as like that's what McFarlane would have put.
My general macro take on Darksiders 2 is that each of its parts, it's sort of a Frankenstein monster of all these different disparate game elements that I love in their own games, and it's kind of this Frankenstein monster of all of them clamped together, but it's also greater than the sum of those parts. That while you can see the roots of everything and where that sort of was borrowed from and where the game that idea came from and the types of games that it's borrowing from over here. And it almost, those things almost stick out like sore thumbs of like, oh, well, I get it. Even so, stuck together, they make for a really fun,
dude,
unique experience of themselves.
That's the mark of something awesome to me right there.
I agree.
Well, and guess what? On a studio that maybe had better luck in the past few years, they might not be satisfied with just being greater than some of its parts. THQ, they're popping champagne right now. They're like, thank God someone said that this game is actually good in any way, because they need something over there. Like, they need things to work. So and I think it works on that level. Now, who knows what the sales will be like, but and I can't even remember the other game it was up against this week. There was another
Sleeping
game.
Dogs.
Sleeping Dogs,
there you go, which we'll talk about a little bit. But it's going to be interesting to see how the sales lay out on those, because I think that Darksiders 1 did put quite a bit of hype into Darksiders 2, and Sleeping Dogs had to kind of fight that, surprisingly. Like, it was kind of
an
underdog
a
little bit.
I can say from my perspective, and see if you guys agree, that a week later, so this is something we should also practice throughout. You know, we talked a lot about reviews, and I can pick up some of that conversation down here. We'll do that later. But one of the things that came up was people would love it if we didn't just review a game and then just drop it and go away from it. So like, this is kind of like the coming back a week later. And coming back a week later on Darksiders 2, very positive still. Like, if anything, you know, more appreciative of the bigger picture piece of it. And how, like what you said, it's more than just the sum of its parts. Yeah, we could dig down into the parts, and it got bigger. And by virtue of getting bigger, maybe there's some parts of it that aren't as detailed and aren't as polished. But overall, it still really comes together as a big thing. So Darksiders 2, if you had been, you know, kind of waiting to see how it weathered, it seems to be weathering really well with us.
Yeah.
You guys are all digging on.
No, and it's there's a lot of game there, too, which is, you know.
It is a long,
too much
long game.
No, not for that type of game, I don't think.
Mike,
no.
What do you think?
Well, there's a lot of games. I haven't touched Counter-Strike, and I can't believe I haven't touched that. I haven't played Sleeping Dogs at all, so there's a lot of games that I need to play.
Did you play Counter-Strike 1.6?
Yeah.
Then you played Go then. Okay. I was watching Ozzy play this the other day, and it was sort of like being in some sort of surreal dream where you look down and he's playing Aztec, and then you realize, wow, that shit looks really pretty. And you're like, that never looked that pretty. I'm like, dude, watch your left. Oh.
Yeah, you already know what's going on.
Yeah. No, right. Not the rope bridge. Damn it. I told you, not the rope bridge. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to like.
No, I said that. I'm the one that said Counter-Strike. But yeah, I mean, I've heard people say, you know, even at 15, 20 hours that they're only partway into the game. I'm probably about 5 hours into the game. And just hearing someone say, oh, I'm 15, 20 hours in and still not that far in, that scares me a little bit,
because
there's so much to do and there's so much to play. So I haven't finished the game. I think you're right. These Zelda kind of games, you kind of know where you are in the structure, because dungeon, and then you do another dungeon, dungeon. So it's pretty easy structure to see. So we'll see. But
who finished Skyward Sword?
I didn't finish it, but I got real close.
Why didn't you finish it?
It was Christmassy times.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I liked it a lot, but it's just
I got
too
really,
much
really
me.
Close.
Because it got
Berghammer, Berghammer was yeah. telling me, like, oh, dude, you just have to push forward because you're so close. And I was like, yeah, but I'm going out of town for Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, Ariel finished it, and there was a lot to get through. There were, like, world shifts and crazy stuff going on, and it got very cool towards the end.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing, actually.
I love that game.
I'm going to put that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like it, too. That's not a judgment that it's not good that I didn't get to finish it, but I just had too much to do. Like, too much going on.
I got to go back and play that now, because I didn't get
it's
very
really
I got
good.
Distracted as well. And
in fact, I would say it's in my top two or three Zelda games. I really liked it that much.
Okay, so I don't have all of my comments in front of me, and I'll make sure and get the credits during one of our breaks. But I think it was VideoStar who put down in last week's show, we were talking about Japanese role-playing games and stuff, that they would like a short mode for big, massive role-playing games, particularly Japanese role-playing games. What do you guys think of that
idea? Super easy to do.
Really?
Here's what you do. You take any of these big, huge, epic things, and you basically crunch the spreadsheet down so that all the grinding goes away. So it's basically just encounter after encounter after encounter, and they
you kill
all
a rat
something.
And you become level 40.
Well, okay, but
you've leveled up.
And in the really grindy games, that would be really extreme. But I think that's what you cut out. You press the button to level.
Yeah,
you cut out the non-unique fat out of the game. That's what I think.
Okay, so. I understand what you're saying about taking the non-unique fat out, taking the going out and hitting encounters. Jeff, Mac, Mike, what do you think? Can you do a short mode? Would you be interested in
I'll tell you how to fix JRPGs. This is how you make a good Japanese style RPG. If it's grindy, that's fine. I don't care. I love grindy games. We'll talk about Puzzlecraft. That's totally a grindy game, but I love it. The thing is, if you have to make me escape the story or go away from it to grind or to re-level or something, that's when I'm out. That's if you need to make me repeat part of the game or go back and do part of the game. If you keep it like Darksiders or Zelda, where I just am continually going through new content, even if there's just a lot of new content, awesome. But if you make me like have to go re-level up five more times just so I can face this next boss, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like that's pointless. That's pointless grinding. So that's how you do it. Now, you know, there are certainly grindy games that like put a high like end game on it, and that's where all the grinding is. Like it's to level up to see the very last stuff in the game. But my problem with JRPGs is a lot of times they will require that you sit there for 5 hours and grind just to make it through the next boss, when I think there should be content and story all the way through. Like, I don't think it should ever make me go back. And so, yeah, for a short mode, I think that there will be more and more short modes, and you'll just pay for it. Like yay, like yay, we'll
you
say.
Cynic.
I know, but if you want to get an XP boost and grind up quicker, just pay us $1 a piece or $2
it's
a piece.
Like the iOS
Dragon
model
Age
for...
3.
Yeah. I mean, look at Mass Effect to a certain extent, and like SSX, they were doing essentially that. Like, you could unlock all the gear you wanted if
what
you paid
weird,
for it.
Weird situation to be in of, I paid all this money, man. Don't make me play your game longer. Yeah. You gave me too much to play. There's too much here. I don't want to play all of it.
See, the people that are like weird, habitual microtransactional purchasers that buy time specifically, I will never get that. I'm like, it gets to the point where you're like, really? I mean, maybe you should find something else to kill 5 minutes with. Like,
The only way I understand it is in an MMO type of a situation where what you want to do is catch up to your buddies who are way ahead of you, and it's like, I just don't have the time to that. Like, my friend is putting in hours that I don't have, and I want to catch up so I can play with him. Mm-hmm. That I get. But the whole idea of like, if only they would make a short mode. I don't know. I mean,
for like a single player game, it's why? Who cares? Like, play the game or don't. Like, go play something else.
Well, I don't know. I guess I understand the desire to see the end.
Yes.
Of something.
That was a big part of it. They wanted to see the end.
There's a thing called the YouTubes. And, I mean, seriously, like,
it's a weird thing to say. I don't want to play as much of this as you're giving me. I like it enough that I don't want as much as you're giving me of it. It's kind of
I think
odd.
It's indicative of pacing problems that tend to strike in big games. Of
nodding, you can't see this on the podcast.
At
but I'm
some
nodding,
point, you
true.
Get into it and you're like into it, and it's going, and then all too frequently, they lose pace, right? And And I suspect that a big part of that is that what makes – so let's say you're making Uncharted. So you're making Uncharted, and it's very because of the length of the game, it's very easy to have people play the game start to finish over and over and over and over and over and over and really get down that tuning model of, am I getting a really good, you know, ebb and flow of story and action and narrative, and is it all coming together the way I want to? And if you're talking about a 60-hour RPG, that's really challenging. I mean, it's a beast just to try and test the things. And, you know, that's really the challenge, is that if you're going to go in and do more than testing and actually try to have someone giving you real feedback on what the game is going like and then have a designer come and explain it to me, it's like it's not conducive to the production schedule, right? So that's the hard part. And yet, at the same time, that's what I think is really challenging. I'm in the middle of Lost Odyssey, and it has had more of those sorts of pacing issues than I can shake a stick at. Now, I'm sticking with it because I'm really enjoying the game when it's on pace. But there are parts where I so sympathize because I'm like forcing myself through it. And it's because it's different problems in different places. Sometimes it's I've been given a stretch of narrative pieces, but they're broken up into little chunks, none of which are rewarding enough in and of themselves to give me a payoff to anything I've done. So I feel like I'm not getting any reward, and then I'm going off and doing some stuff. Some of it is I'm just left to wander around too often without a clear direction of what I'm supposed to do next. Some of it is I have too long a stretch of little weird, intricate, mazy pieces where if I fail, then I go back to a save point that's too far away. And so it's a number of culprits. I don't think the answer, though, is to say, oh, well, what you need is a quick mode, because I don't know how you get. The thing about those games is that you need all those things. You need the escalation of the story. You need to have, one of the really rewarding things for me about a role playing game is spending the time with the characters, because it's a whole other degree of character development. You read a book and you only get the character beats that the author gives you, but you get a very structured view of them. You watch a movie and you get them, but you get them in lightning progression, right? They have to really condense a lot of stuff. It's up to a great editor to really give you those pieces that form those meanings. In a game, a lot of them are formed by me playing them. And I think that a really rich RPG experience has those character pieces, those identifying character pieces where I'm controlling the character and things happen and really engage me. And then it's keeping the pace going. And sometimes a 60-hour game can feel like a 20-hour game. And sometimes a 20-hour game feel like a 60-hour game.
Don't you think that the real problem with Japanese role-playing games in particular is that the majority of what you're doing in those games is living inside this combat system that is usually a walled garden, literally in a lot of older games, where you're like fade out, fade into some strange arena you're in for the fight.
Right.
And you're in this rule set that is wholly autonomous and it has no bearing on the rest of the game, and that you're in that a lot, and it rarely changes. It doesn't evolve much. I mean, you'll get more powers, you'll get more powerful, but a fireball is not much different from the firestorm that you get at, you know, level 20 or whatever.
And there's an important distinction to make between JRPGs and Western RPGs in that, you know, JRPGs are by and large pretty linear. And these big, wide open, like Bethesda-style RPGs, the pacing of those is driven by the player, right? Yeah. It's player agency that moves the story forward. So if you just go out and pick herbs for 3 hours, you can bitch about the pacing, but
right.
Like that's what you chose to do.
You own it, right?
Yeah, you own it. You're like, I was picking flowers.
But I think this applies much more directly to the linear model of storytelling in a game, like especially a role-playing game.
And what lengthens those games is how much time you're spending just fighting things.
Yeah.
And you're fighting things in this rule set. And a lot of times it can be really, really fun, but then it can get really repetitive. And I think that the problem is that a lot of those systems are great for a while, but they don't do anything with them. They just kind of stay
there.
Well,
that is the system. That's all you have in JRPGs, right? I mean, yeah, you might have an economy mechanic, but That's
and,
it.
And Fight. That used to be the really cool thing was that those systems were constantly being iterated on and evolved. And you'd
but get, not within the same game.
Right, you know, from game to game. Yeah. And you'd get new active time battle systems, right. And you'd get new power ideas, and you'd get, you know, materia or draw system. And then what the best of class of those games do is that every encounter, because you get lots of different encounters, they are able to continue throwing more of a mix of things at you. I think one of the problems that Lost Odyssey really ran into was that obviously not having a team as big as the Final Fantasy team, and I think I talked about this last week, is that there's just not enough variety in what they throw yeah. into the mix to keep you enjoying mm-hmm. the combat system. The combat system is great. It just needs more variety of things thrown into it. And
I think you hit dead on. I think it's pacing and variety, and those are the two things that make a game really good. When you look at the classic JRPGs, Final Fantasy VII, Chrono Trigger, like all these really classic games, that's what they do. They yeah. have variety in the combat that goes over, and not necessarily over time, but just in the way that the different systems
and they challenge
work.
You with different things. Like, now here's a new combination of characters where this one will throw an area of effect attack at you. This one cancels this sort of attack that you have. And this one back here has a overarching ability that buffs everybody on this side, or has a draw ability. And then they keep mixing and matching.
And
all
then
those
you
things.
Get a new character every once in a while
exactly.
that mixes it up again. And it keeps you going. And that's right. And in all those games, Final Fantasy IX is another one that I really loved. In all those games, I never felt like, oh, well, I guess I gotta just go grind. I always had something new to play with. I always had something new to check out. Whereas, and maybe it is a smaller staff. Maybe it's just the budgets, and they just, you know, there's more games released these days, and so they're not, you know, there's a lot to go around. But maybe it's just that. But if pacing doesn't hit for me, or the variety doesn't stay up, I got better stuff to play. I got other games to play, so.
I got other playing games to play, Sonny. But so rounding off that question is, I think that on first blush, this idea of a quick mode is like, hell yeah, that's awesome. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, I don't think it works. Because a quick mode would take away so much of what has to be there for those games to be work, to really be successful, that what really needs to happen is the games need to be fixed.
Right.
The game design needs to really
The magic work. Of RPG is you're in the back of a dark cavern. You find a flaming sword that no one else has ever found. This has been sitting back here for thousands of years. You take that flaming sword, you use it to beat that boss that you couldn't beat before. And because you made that choice, because you went back to that cavern and you explored and you found it, you did it. And if you just pay for a flaming sword, that doesn't mean nearly as much to you as going to find it and figuring that out. Or pay, or just do a quick mode where it just gives you the
thing. And the ultimate
thing
is you've got to go on that. You've got to go find it. You've got to go look for it.
You've got to experience
that. And then
it's
up to the designer to make sure that your search for that is just the right amount of searching and exploring to be rewarding when you find it, but not so much that you're like, fuck's sakes, am I ever going to find this thing? Like, I know there's something I'm looking for. I know there's something that I'm looking for that's going to get me past this.
You have
Where
to go look
it?
Online, and they say that there's a stone, but there's only one stone, and you can't find the right stone. And
dude, the moment you have your iPad in your hand with Game Facts pulled
it's
up,
it's done.
It's you've lost, right? You have lost.
And some little 13-year-old is like, "This is a super easy battle. It's totally fine. Just use your fireballs."
All right, stick around, folks. When we come back on the other side, we will catch up with we'll do like the 1 week comparison on Sleeping Dogs. That'll be good, and we'll go from there and see what happens. Don't go anywhere. Week in Confirmed. We'll be right back. Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Week in Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. If you had told me even 5 years ago, or 6 or 7 years ago, that when Diablo 3 finally came out, that I would not have finished it, and I would not have finished it even a day after it had
Talk
come
about
two
a
days.
Game with a short mode.
You didn't finish it. Get out.
Yeah,
get out right now.
I still haven't finished it. And I think this is another one.
You mean
of,
you haven't completed Nightmare, right?
No, I mean I have not finished the game.
I'm also in that camp.
I set it down, and you know what?
I'm just such. It is my favorite game of the year.
The compulsion loop. I'm Well, I'll probably go back to it at some point when it's...
I don't know what the... I've seriously... It sounds so freaking nerdy. I have seriously laid in bed at night staring at the ceiling and wondered to myself, is there something wrong with me? Is
there... So we're not talking about your relationship, Garnet.
Is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with Diablo 3?
Don't drink alcohol in excess with Cialis.
It's been like 3.5 hours. Should I call my doctor?
Did I tell you that the dudes downstairs smoke a lot?
Listen.
No, I mean, but seriously, I haven't.
It's cool
that
you didn't finish Diablo. It happens to some guys sometimes.
Jesus Christ.
See, I finished Diablo too soon.
I'm such a fucking nerd. I really do actually lay in bed at night a lot of times thinking about game stuff. And this is like really one that has like
both your hobby and your job.
I sort of like say that, like, why the fuck haven't I finished? Why am
finish
I not?
It. It's awesome.
I was gonna say, maybe you didn't spend so much time lying in bed wondering about games.
Yeah, fucking
Diablo.
Pussy.
Yeah, get up.
Get up and go play Diablo.
Take some goddamn no-dos and go play that game right now.
I'm telling you, dude, that last level's awesome.
I'm sure
it's still my favorite game of the year. Despite there's this weird turn that's happened where everybody sort of has agreed that it was
bad. A lot of people are down on it. Definitely.
I'm not part of that camp. I hate that group think like, oh, we've all decided that now it's shitty, which it's not.
I think it's great.
It's awesome.
I reviewed it. I gave it 5. It's my first perfect review. I gave it 5 out of 5. It's great.
So what do you think of this? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if nothing else, the friends list is completely open. You can jump into anyone's game at any time.
Yeah,
so jump into
so
someone's game that they're jump into someone's game that they're already ahead of you, and then just follow them along at the very least.
But like, then I'm not getting the story experience because the story is the best part of Diablo 3.
It sounds like a personal problem.
So, well, Mike, what are your thoughts on the real money suction house?
Suction house. I like it.
Well, thank you for asking such an unbiased question.
No, I'm on record. I think that's one of the worst ideas of putting a real money auction house into a fucking video game.
I don't think it worked the way that they
wanted. Says the guy who has not made $13 like me.
You made $13?
13 big fucking dollars.
Guess how much? Guess how much I've made from all my work on the Diablo 3 auction house.
Oh yeah, you were gonna. You, I remember you when you last time you were on the show.
Yeah,
you were like, I'm gonna bust my ass.
I was not. Well,
it's gonna be my job.
First of all, I'm still working on Joystick, so there's that. But guess how much money I've made. And keep in mind that this is Blizzard. I love World of Warcraft. I have given them thousands, if not, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for all the games over the years.
I'm going to go with $1.380.
I've made 25 cents.
Really? I've made more than you?
25 cents.
Did you lose money on transactions?
I did not lose.
How much have you spent?
No, I didn't spend anything. I have listed probably 300 items, like the best items I've come across. Only one of them ever sold. And I got an email from Blizzard that says, congratulations. After the $1.25 sale or whatever it was, they're like, here's what we're going to be paying you over PayPal, 25 cents.
Go call someone who cares.
And I was like, there you go. I was like, thank Blizzard for all the thousands of dollars that I've given you for collector's editions on World of Warcraft, for monthly subscriptions, for Diablo 3. I bought the year's package. Like, I bought the whole thing. I've made 25 cents. And I think I listed a few more items after that. I was like, I'm done with it. Because here's the thing, and this is the way I guess it's always been. They decided to put it in there because it was already happening for Diablo 2.
Right.
Now, you guys have gotten me started on Diablo 3. We'll talk about this, but then we'll move on to the next thing.
Right.
No, Diablo 3 is good.
It was already happening for Diablo 2.
They just want to make it official,
which players don't care. If they're going to pay to some grubby website or just Blizzard, they don't care at all. But what had always happened in Diablo 2 is it's only the highest level stuff. You don't buy, a 25 damage sword for Diablo 2.
Right.
You buy 100 stones of Jordan. Like, you buy the highest level, max level stuff. And I think that's what it is in Diablo right now. Like, there are a group of people who really, really care about the game who are selling to a group of people who really, really care about the game, and that's about it. Like, that's the high level of the Diablo 3 auction house. I don't think it did as well as Blizzard wanted. I don't think the game did as well as Blizzard wanted because they didn't realize that people wanted it to be another World of Warcraft. They wanted endless content. They wanted a bunch of new stuff, and it's not. It's an experience that they just sort of release. I do think they have this new system that they released. I haven't even had a chance to play with that either, but the prestige system or whatever it's called, or starts with a P. I forget exactly what the name
prestige.
Is. And then
I like Kanata's response to that. What was your response earlier about in the pre-show to that?
I don't remember. What did I say?
You're like they don't know what the hell they're doing. It's like just a mess.
It hurts my soul a little bit because I love that game a lot.
Well, they're trying to add on more content, but they don't have
their heart's in the right place, mm-hmm. and you can tell that they're scrambling to
fill a need that it's hard for me to understand that they didn't foresee.
Yeah.
But it just really feels like they don't have the time to put out the content that's required to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And nobody played that game more. Well, not nobody, but very few people played that game more than me for a certain stretch of time. And I have had very little draw to go back to it since, even though I have said repeatedly today, still my favorite game of the year. And I love that combat system. I could just revel in it.
Well,
I love it.
And here's the other thing. Blizzard as a company is surprisingly insecure. They are surprisingly fragile whenever people respond to the stuff that they make. And they're super
you.
Well, hang on. I'm taking us back around to what we're talking about. That's why they barely ever release anything. And that's why it takes them years to put a game out, because they want to make sure that it is perfect. They have to make it perfect. They have to be on top of it. They don't willy-nilly release stuff. They have to release it like crafted and perfectly. And so when, I don't know, a former Diablo 2 creator comes along and says, well, I don't think the game quite did what it should have, they blow up. They're like, how dare you? They're like, we crafted that. We worked on that. And they say, yes, F that loser, is what they say.
Well, I mean, inappropriate response.
Yeah, I don't think it's justified.
The story,
somebody said your baby's ugly. And of course, somebody's going to protect their baby.
Let's set the stage here. So Dave Brevik, who was a founder of Blizzard North, created Diablo and created Diablo 2. And as a matter of fact, since people often wonder this, you know what Diablo is named for?
Diablo.
Yeah, Diablo. You can see it from my house that I grew up in, by the way.
Which you could see from his house as well.
You know what's crazy? My entire upbringing, I always thought it was Mount Diablo. Everybody I've ever met in the Bay Area called it Mount Diablo.
Well, I think it's also Spanish for devil.
Oh shit!
Oh my gosh!
Oh my god!
Anyway, so Diablo.
What a coincidence!
So, Dave Brevik, who has had his own challenges since the demise of Blizzard North, he and Roper, who was also at North, did Hellgate, and it was, you know, Hellgate fell apart. Hellgate was a disaster.
It was.
I mean, I went and saw those guys.
I like how you couched it a little bit, and then you're like, nope, it was a complete disaster. Well, it was.
I was trying to think about how to say it. I mean, I like them. What was cool was when I was in San Francisco working at 1UP, their offices were over by the ballpark, which was not far from us, and we knew the PR people there, and we knew friends there, and so we did a whole cover story with them, and I got to know Dave.
I was so excited about that game. I was so excited about it.
They were so into it, and I think that the thing is that they had this very cool conceptual idea of what it was going to be, and then trying to pull it together and make it cool within the whole... I mean, and then the ironic has been pointed out, like, Borderlands, by the way, totally did what they wanted to do and got it right, and it's because it was more shooter-focused, and that's fine.
For
Brevik,
you can love Hellgate. Like, I don't care how good you think Hellgate is. Like, maybe it was your favorite game ever. You have to agree, it's a disaster. Like, it did not work the way that they wanted it to work. So you can't really argue that.
Yeah. So
now I'm going to get in the comments of this show. David Brevik is going to be F that loser for talking about.
You know what? Actually, Dave would never do that because he's a super cool guy. He's a super nice guy. And I'm, you know what?
Well, see, but if ran he, out of
if,
gas there,
if he had come out and said, "Oh,
I don't really know, I don't really know about Jay,"
successor.
I mean, I don't know
Jay Wilson, created Diablo 3. Which is where we're going with this.
Sorry, I don't know Jay Wilson that well. So, I mean, he came out of the RTS side of Blizzard South, and obviously, there's a different ethos there, a different approach. And look, I mean, look, Diablo 3 as it came out isn't even Diablo 3. There's been a lot of conversation, and I don't know if it came out, you know, publicly or not. But you know, there was a whole other Diablo 3 that was being made years ago
that was the MMO
that was like World of Warcraft Diablo, and who knows, like, would people have been happy with that? Because that sure as shit wouldn't have been Diablo. It sure as hell wouldn't have been what people wanted.
All hypothetical. You can't even
super hypothetical. Yeah. So what happened was Ink Gamers interviewed Dave at Brevik at Gamescom, and he said, you know, he talked a lot about like the game. He actually got into some of the details of things he thought weren't working.
Yeah,
like, he talked about the loot system and how, and it basically sounded like a lot of things the people on the forum had pointed out.
It was pretty constructive criticism. Yeah, like, he wasn't just trashing on the game. He said, "Oh, it's not really the game we wanted to make."
And then he kind of he crossed the line, because at the end of it, he said he had mixed emotions about Diablo 3 and that obviously it's not the game that they would have made at Blizzard North, and that he's a little happy, which he hated to say, because it shows that the people who were involved with Diablo really did matter, and that he's happy that it's come to light how talented that group was. To it, Jason Wilson, who's a game director on Facebook, underneath a post about linking to the article, said, "Fuck that loser," which, wow.
I'm sure he meant that in the nicest possible way.
No, and it was, I mean, that is very honest what he just said, and it's probably how he really feels, and sometimes you have to be a little diplomatic about that kind of stuff. Like, you can't just, backhandedly shit on a whole other team, even if maybe, you know.
So there are members of Blizzard North at Blizzard South who worked on Diablo 3, and there's a ton of work and expectations to deal with, and there's all kinds of stuff that went into Diablo 3. Like, fuck that loser. That's...
Well, don't forget, too, this is a Facebook post. There are a lot of Blizzard people on Facebook. I'm friends with some of them. And this is a post that, you know, he kind of... It was really only meant for internal people. I mean, obviously, it was on Facebook, so it was public eventually.
It was on Facebook.
All right.
Yeah.
It was
on Facebook.
So, but he
I'm
going
to tweet something here in a little bit. It's just for me and you. But
all right. That message was meant
is
for...
Is it a picture all right, of your wiener?
I won't try that then. But I do know that the Blizzard guys are very familiar. I've seen a lot of Blizzard babies being announced on Facebook. And, like, it's a very close-knit community, even on Facebook.
Sure.
And they're very open over there. And, like I said, Blizzard has this sort of weird insecurity where they have... Everything they release has to be awesome. It has to be awesome. And they're really pushing.
Because they love
what
they do.
Yeah. And they're
it's
really.
Cool that they do that.
They're really. But there's a lot of pressure over there, too. Like, they are working with Activision now. Like, there's a lot of pressure on all the teams over there to do it exactly right. And, like we've said, Diablo's gone through a couple iterations. Yeah. They were really invested in the Diablo that they released. And, you know, even when Brevik said something even just a little bit out of line, I could see how, and I don't think that he should have posted that on public forum, but I could also see how they would be sort of taken aback a little bit, because this game that they worked for years and put their heart and soul into, you know, someone came along and said, "Oh, I'm glad it didn't do very well."
Well, like, they're gonna have their chance, because he's doing
his Marvel
action,
MMO.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
His action Diablo-styled Marvel MMO. So they'll have their chance. And to his credit, Jay did get on the official Blizzard forums and wrote an apology. His apology said that, "I want to make it clear that I'm very sorry for what I said. I have higher expectations for myself than to express my feelings in such a rash way and disrespect a fellow developer like Dave," which was awesome. Mega props for him for that. And then he had to go and ruin it, because he turned it into an advertisement for all they're doing and why you should come play Diablo 3. And I didn't think that was very cool, actually. It's like, you know what? It was a really genuine, nice, heartfelt sounding apology in the first two paragraphs. And then it's 8 or 9 paragraphs about all the things they're doing to make Diablo 3 a better game and how hard they're working on it. And how much you Diablo 3 players are going to love it. And if you haven't picked up Diablo 3, you should go buy it right now at your favorite retailer for $49.99. Available online at the Blizzard store. Like, really? Like, just make the apology and get out. I don't know.
Game developer on a forums for a specific game. I mean, I can't
He's getting
really,
eyeballs. Yeah. Might as well. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. I'm much more ready to cut him slack for he didn't write it. That he wanted that he said, "I need to write an apology," and then when he did, someone at corporate said, "Okay, make sure you mention this stuff, because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, that's included in the message." Because remember Dave was commenting on the quality of the game, and we want to make sure that you address those issues that he'd gotten there. Because I think that the apology was very sincere, and then that part kind of just struck me as like, what? Where'd that, like, why are you selling me on the, you've got patch notes, you just released them, I don't need.
Diablo 3 is so weird. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that game in 5 years, because I think that, you know, it was supposed to be World of Warcraft. It was supposed to be another World of Warcraft. And no game's going to be World of Warcraft again. Like,
well, what's going to be most interesting is to see whether they morph what was built as a single-player game with connected issues, you know, connected functionality, into this ongoing, evolving, online-enabled game that really does have that staying power. Because two stayed because we went back and played the content over and over. Here it's that they're proposing to essentially take an MMO-style streaming updates over the over its life to a game that was just a packaged product. Then at some point in time, it's going to be interesting to figure out how they monetize that.
Yeah. Well, real money suction house.
They got to deliver on it. They got to deliver on PvP first.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't forget they've got PvP coming. They already have all these updates in the pipeline, which the fact that they haven't released those yet, you know, makes you wonder how the team is going, how quickly that team's moving over there. So, again, I think it's going to be very fascinating to see where that game is in, like, 3 years, 5 years, so on. Because Blizzard is in an interesting position over there. They haven't failed. It was one of the best-selling games, you know, of the week. And
it's definitely not a failure.
It's definitely not a failure.
I just hope they don't try to build.
Are you serious or are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm totally serious. It's definitely not a failure. Dude, it's like, it's sold ridiculously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a...
Kuchera over on Penny Arcade Report was just, like, pointing that out the other day. He's like, keep in mind, like, Diablo 3, the best-selling PC game of all time.
Yeah.
And also good.
And it's critically acclaimed. Yeah, it's terrific.
And also good. You're right. Because, Jeff, you played, like, 100-something. Like,
yes!
There's no reason to rewrite history here. It's like you wanted it to be so awesomely amazing that you played it for an awesome, amazingly amount of time. And you're like, I want more.
Yes.
I wonder why Jay just didn't call Brevik out on that. He's instead of saying F that loser, he could have been like, oh, so making the best-selling PC game of all time wasn't good enough for you? Blizzard North could have sold the double best-selling PC game of all time? Like, what could they have done better? So
that would have been much more. So let's continue let's turn the roving eye of the weekend confirmed review a week later to Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, yes. Sleeping Dog. Did anybody else play anymore?
I've been playing more of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So a week later, Sleeping Dogs, still climbing in your estimation, stable, or it's hanging off?
I think it's solid. I think it's a solid game.
That's like how you describe a girl with a good personality.
She's solid.
No, I mean, I'm just saying. It's like, so,
real well built.
So you're going to go out with her again?
That girl is physically solid.
You know, we might meet for lunch sometime, but you know, this is not the girl you're going to stay.
She's not an evening date.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have an evening date with Sleeping Dogs. It does not doing anything badly, and it's just not it's not my favorite game. But it's an excellent entry into that genre.
It doesn't really do anything. None of its parts are perfect in and of themselves.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the combat is, you know, it's fun and good, but
a lot better than GTA's combat.
But it's not. But it's not Arkham City.
Really,
you
know, a hell of a lot better than GTA's.
Yeah, I was never a fan.
The hand to hand combat.
The combat itself is better than any open.
The gunplay is not as good though.
No, of five, you mean, or of Red Dead, I guess.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Rockstar's gotten better. I mean, it's a little less awkward than.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a big swimmy, huge reticle. And yeah. Like, you know, you're.
I really do like the hand to hand stuff.
Hand to hand stuff's fun.
And I like the emphasis on it. And I like the upgrade system, like sort of the role playing element where you can and I love the fact that it makes collectibles have meaning because now you use them to get new moves and stuff.
Right.
That's cool. And
The ambiance is going a big long way for me too. I mean, just playing in that setting in that locale is very fun.
It is.
The driving is solid. I'd probably give it a slight edge over the latest Saints Row game, but again,
that's like apples and oranges a little bit.
I love the because
Saints Row to me is just so wacky that I have a hard time.
I mean the driving
of the hovercraft. How'd that go? Just kidding.
Oh no,
there's no hovercraft in no Sleeping Dogs.
Not as far as I know, but it's well, okay. So if I'm using GTA 4 as sort of the high water mark for in-game driving physics in an open world, yeah, it goes Grand Theft Auto at the top, then. Sleeping Dogs, and then finally Saints Row.
Right.
It's just, it does, the cars have a bit more weight to them. Like Saints Row is just like, you can stop on a dime and it's fun,
but it's
not like, not like driving a car.
So would you take Sleeping Dogs to meet your parents?
Nah. Now my parents don't like ultra violence.
If Sleeping Dogs needed a ride to the airport, would you be there?
I might post a picture of us on Facebook just for a minute, you know.
So all your friends can go, oh, who's that? Yeah,
how about this? Jeff Mattis, would you buy Papo EO a second drink?
I would, but I'd realize that, you know, I might not go out on double dates with certain friends because my certain friends might not, you know, get why I like Papo EO.
Okay.
Wow, that's a kind of an overwrought
metaphor.
Beat that metaphor into the ground.
So it's I really like what it's trying to do, which is like thematically, which is this whole, you know, child abuse sort of undercurrent and what it's like to be a kid that has an authority figure or a parent or some sort of protector that can turn on a dime and sort of, you know, create a sense of danger as well. That part of it is really cool in the way that they do that. The puzzles themselves in the game, while they're good, and some of them are actually pretty innovative, there's nothing about the actual gameplay that I've encountered so far that's like, whoa, this is so awesome. Like, I have to, you know, this is so revolutionary and so cool. But it is one of those things where the experience is something that I'm really enjoying. I don't think a lot of games are really, you know, whether it's being brave enough to tackle subject matter like that or to do it in such a not, I mean, it's evident what they're talking about, but doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's not like always up in your face.
Okay, so the most common comparison I've gotten in Papa Wii U is to Eco.
Yeah.
And now that you've played more of it, from a game mechanic standpoint alone, does it have the same sort of adventure game style to it, or tell me where it's
yes,
at.
Yes, very much. Very much an adventure game style thing. It's not as good as Eco is.
It's almost got more platformer elements than necessarily Eco. It's not quite as grounded, I think, as Eco is. It plays a little bit more with like physics and platforms and stuff like that. I reviewed it for Joystick, and what I said about the puzzles is the weak point is that, like Portal, the puzzles are so brilliant at game because they basically give you some mechanics and you like have to figure out how these mechanics work together. In Papa Wii U, it's basically like, where's the next switch? Like, that's the extent of the puzzles.
Yes.
You just have to figure out where to go in the level.
And it does at times make you like, it's like, oh, cool, I'm exploring and I'm looking around and stuff. But yes, there are times at which I'm like, wow, what is driving me forward here? Like other than I'm trying to get through the next door or
just trying to
flip the next
up
switch. So yeah, I think that's a problem that the game suffers from.
But I agree with you. What it does really well, and probably even, you know, that makes it, when I reviewed it on Joystick, I gave it 3.5, and I stand by that score, but I felt a little bit bad about it because the relationship that it creates between you and this pink monster thing that you're walking around with is just so deep and so complex, and it really paints this, you know, real tragedy of child abuse in a way that you can't paint in like a movie or a novel or anything like that. It paints it in a really interactive way, in a way that is really strong for the game. So it's a heartbreaking like thing to realize that this thing that you're playing with, this guy, this gigantic guy that you trust and that you play with, can sometimes betray you and flip out on you, and you don't know exactly why or how. You can't quite figure it out. It's really great. So the relationship is awesome. The way it paints that relationship is really impressive. Unfortunately, the puzzles aren't that complex, and the physics are a little weird. I even had it crash a couple times as I played through it.
I mean, the technical
part of it's not that great.
Really? On PS3?
On PS3, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now it does have bits that, you know, some art in it that looks really, really good, and you're like, oh, this is a really cool vista, I mean, the setting of it is also really, really neat. You know, the favela sort of Latin America, you know, you don't really get to experience that too much, I think.
It does look fun. There's a lot of magical touches, too, like magical realism. It's a very South American thing, and it does have a lot of really cool artistic touches.
Explain what you mean.
Magical realism is that old, you know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez type of, I probably messed up that name. That's probably not the right name. But that old, like, mystical mix of, like, really gritty, like, the favelas are basically a ghetto, like a really poor area. But then there are parts where, like, you'll pull on a switch and suddenly a big white sheet will open up out of the ghetto. And there's one puzzle that's very early in the game that everyone knows about. So this isn't too much of a spoiler, but you carry these boxes around.
Yeah.
And these houses relate to the boxes as you carry them around. So if you move a box over here in the background, a house will also move the same way that you move the box. And then you can kind of move those boxes to set up a path, and then you can walk across those houses that have moved in accordance with the boxes. So there is like a very kind of fun, magical feel about the game, and the art really contributes to that really well.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a game that's going to, like, stump you for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's relatively easy and short, like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
which
I think I'm almost done with it. I've only been playing for a couple hours. So.
So coming back a week later on that one, this is like a whole new thing. I feel like we've discovered a whole new way to drive the show.
Week later confirmed.
Week later confirmed.
Last week confirmed.
So
weekend reaffirmed.
And doggone it, people like me.
I haven't played it since I finished it because I think it is kind of an experience to play through.
And then that's it. So it's a one and done.
I think so. And so that's not a bad thing because it's a really powerful experience to play through. And it's really well contained game. Like it really was designed very well.
Would you? So if you were qualifying, would you put it into the not to be missed category or in the really cool? And if you're a fan of like the art side of gaming and indies and that sort of thing, then you want to check it out. But don't kill yourself if you don't see it.
The second one.
Yeah, okay. The second one.
I don't remember.
I'm gonna go ahead and say every game that I review is don't kill yourself if you didn't see it. I just blanket. It's a blanket recommendation.
Except for Diablo 3.
Two. No, Diablo 2.
It's a very good game, but still the killing yourself part.
All right. Silly. Silly boys. There's not even any kitty here. You missed the kid.
All the kidding.
I knew I could get one out of him.
How's it
all
doing?
What's it doing right now?
The better question is, does it miss me?
Yes. Yes, Jeff, it does. Would you like to come over and pick it up?
Would I?
Need a ride to the airport?
He's going
to
do it with a really high voice, though.
All right, let's take a little break. When you come back on the other side, we will, I don't know, we'll figure out what we're doing. We'll be right back. Would you like another refreshing beverage?
Yeah, I would.
You know, I just found out some very sad news, but some very awesome news. And the awesome news is that Jeff has a brand new production that he's going to be in
coming up at the end of September,
beginning of October.
Means I'm going to miss a couple episodes, unfortunately. I'm really sad to do that.
But you're going to be in the production of Noises Off, and I'll let you tell the story.
Oh, not much of a story. I mean, it's going to be at the Norris Theater down in Palos Verdes. If you are around, it's September 21st to October 7th, I believe. So I'm going to miss a couple episodes just because we'll be in rehearsals and it's kind of far from here. But hopefully, if
congratulations,
around,
dude.
Thanks, man. It's one of my favorite plays and I'm really excited about it. People are probably familiar with the film version that came out, I think, late 80s or early 90s.
Maybe or maybe not.
Maybe they're too young for that. It's a great film version, and I get to play the John Ritter role he played in the movie.
That's
really
awesome.
Fun. Yeah, yeah.
That is really cool. It's a fantastic sounding playhouse.
Yeah, it's a real big theater, and they have a budget, and I think it's going to be fun. So I'm excited.
So definitely look into that. We will have links in the show notes upcoming today and in all future shows on how we can get tickets and go down there and make sure to represent for your Weekend Confirmed crew.
Yeah. Actually, I was really, really touched by how many people came out to see the last show I did, which was much smaller scale than this one. And so thanks to all the fans that came. That was really, really cool.
This just in, Jeff's actually a really good actor.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah. Of course. Well earned. Oh, look, he's all cute. Dude, you are a good actor.
Let's talk about the kitty more.
Hey, he acts like he likes us every week.
So. Yeah. So last week, Papa Yo. This week, Dust and Elysian Tale.
T-A-I-L. What's up, everybody?
And one of the ways he'd like to act is put on that furry suit.
Oh, man.
So by the way, so lay out for me what Dust and Elysian Tale is and why the furry reference? Because that comes...
Well...
Don't you move stuff around in a world? Like protect people against typhoons?
No, you create typhoons. Oh, you make dust storms, dude.
Oh, that's what you did.
I was slow on the uptake on that one.
Go ahead.
Yes. It's populous. Yeah. Okay. It's not a god game.
That's the other dust.
Yeah.
That game was really good, too.
I want to say right off the top, I love this game. Love it. Love it. One of my easily top 10, probably top 5 PS2 games of all PS2 games was Odin Sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love that game.
Very pretty, yeah.
Wow.
Very similar feel to this. Really? You know, it's got that same sort of large size character where the camera is kind of zoomed in and real hand-drawn animated. Looks like cells from a hand-drawn 2D
animation. Is it the same studio?
Is it?
I don't know.
It could very well.
Because I didn't know anything about this game.
Remember, is from Design Build Play.
Right.
It's
okay.
I will look it up while you're doing this. But it's just a guy working on it. He's been working on it for forever. And was part of the contest. And that's what's really cool about this game is it now came to fruition.
Well, the whole furry thing comes from the fact that it really feels like a Don Bluth movie or a...
were full of furries.
It just feels like an animated kids... Like all the characters are anthropomorphized animals. So you're some sort of rabbit guy looking thing. And, you know, you have a squirrel that you hang out with and you go into town and there's like bears and... You know, adorable muskrats and weasels and things. So, but it's awesome. It's so great, high quality, hand drawn cells. And whenever you get into a conversation with them, which you do a lot because it's sort of a pseudo role playing world where you go into town and you get side quests and all this stuff, they have these giant portraits of them that show up on the screen and there's full voice acting. And the voice acting is very, hey, here we are, you know, that kind of like very animated, very children's, you know, Saturday morning cartoon version of it, which is awesome. I really dig it.
And what's the actual gameplay of it, though?
Well, so it's a 2D sort of platformy action game. You have a sword. A sword is anthropomorphized as well. It talks to you and has a personality.
Nice.
And it's almost like Strider, the old game, one of my favorite games of all time, actually. So you're doing massive combos. You know, you build up your combo meter. You're attacking enemies on the screen, 2D. You know, you're using your sword, and you have a special attack. You can create these dust storms where you spin your sword around, and it lifts things off the air. And you've got this little character that hangs out with you that can propel stuff, and you can spin that in your dust storm and, you know, create more combos. And the higher your combo meter, the more experience points you get for kills. And you're collecting items. There's a whole crafting system as well. So enemies will drop items and you can pick stuff up and craft different pieces of armor and weapons and stuff. So it's got a leveling mechanic. You level things up. You put points in your health, your attack, your defense. You know, sort of very traditional role-playing elements there. You know, you outfit your character with better equipment and stuff. All that very traditional, cool. What's so special about it is the fighting system is awesome, and it's very much that old school 2D. Just create a huge combo, keep it up. Popping between enemies, you're way overpowered all the time. You're fighting tons of enemies at a time. You know, it's
funny because when we started this conversation, the best thing I had was joking that it was also called Dust. And the second they said Odin Sphere, I'm going right home and downloading it.
I'm
going to get it right away.
Yeah, it's awesome. Very reminiscent of that game for me. I mean, I loved the Odin Sphere, like planting stuff in the ground while you're fighting and like creating plants and shit like that. That was cool. This game doesn't have quite that, but it does have that still when I'm fighting something and it drops a cool crafting item that I want. And you're like collecting keys and you find chests, and some chests require like 4 keys and you only have 3. And so you want to go find another key. And there's like alternate paths and side quests, and all the characters are really fun and interesting, and the voice acting is excellent.
So it's just because of the anthropomorphic nature of the characters that people are calling it Furryville.
Yeah.
Not because
you're
actually a dude
weird
in
happens.
An animal suit trying to make it with all the woodland creatures.
Well, I mean, you do find there's like romantic storylines, and you're not a dude, you're an anthropomorphic
right
thing
okay
too.
So yeah, yeah. Right.
And actually the weakest part of the game is the main character. He's like so very, you know, affected all the time, and he doesn't remember who he is.
Snake.
Dude, do you need to take a little break to hit the can? Are you all right?
This seems so familiar to me. I don't have I been here before? Oh, she remembers me.
So the Norris Playhouse, Noise is Off, go check him out. Yeah.
I mean,
check him out later this year.
It's that a lot. But all the other characters are really, really fun to listen to. And
I want to make sure that we're talking about Dust and Elysian Trail, and I looked it up.
Tail,
because I wanted to make sure that we got the credit correct.
Yeah.
Because it was one guy who put it together almost entirely, and his name is Dean Dodrell.
Huh.
And the name of his studio that he made it under is Humble Hearts. But the big deal was that he won the Design Build Play contest, which awarded him the contract to make this thing, and then stuck it out for 3 years, completing this thing essentially on his own, which is that's the thing that to me has been the story of this game, you know, from the beginning of Summer of Arcade when it was first announced, like, hey, this thing's coming out, remember that? And I was like, oh yeah, that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the name the name throws you off. Like,
the name does it no favors.
It doesn't yeah. tell you what it is, doesn't know what's going on, doesn't tell you if it's a kid game or what it is. Yeah. And I think the hand-drawn art, because there was another game called Muramasa, which was the Odin Spirit developer.
Right.
And that game on the Wii was incredible. Like, yep. 2D action game, it was really fun. And just the description that you have given here has me really interested in it. So I think
Shane would be so happy right now.
Yeah, I love Muramasa as well. That was a great game.
It was a great game.
Yeah, and Dust is the name of the main character, but there's no reason. I mean, it's stupid. And his attack is the Dust Storm. But yeah, right. It does it no favors, that title. It's unfortunate.
Well, it sounds really interesting. And the Dream Build Play is a contest, of course, put on by Microsoft. They're picking them again this year. And we just posted that they just have announced the new finalists, the latest finalists. They've got 40, which is 20 Xbox Live indie games and 20 Windows Phone games. And they're picking one of each of those to win the award. And cool. then there's cash prizes and all that stuff. So you can go look at that list of the finalists right now. It's out.
And indie games are a great example of the creative flame that's really burning strong still all across the globe in video games. And I really liked that a user jumped into the Shack News forums to sort of call me out to a degree. And this is, I think that this to a degree is probably accurate. Fake Kisser wrote that I just wanted to chime in and say that I personally think Garnet is a little biased when it comes to looking at Japanese developed games like Puppeteer and Rain, because I was raving about them last week. And admittedly, those videos, I think, were really atmospheric.
No, they really
grabbed you, right?
Sure.
I also think they look great, and there's no doubt that Japan has its own strengths and unique takes due to their culture. Japanese developers can create games that Western developers can't, and vice versa. So yes, they are super valuable, and I want to see more games like that. However, to say that they have a monopoly on those types of games is just not accurate. You can definitely make a case that Japanese publishers are more willing to promote those ideas, but that just further cements my point that, if anything, we should be pushing Western publishers to give more attention to creative Western games that already exist. I think I think that's right. And games like Dust and Elysian Tail needing to be I guess it's cool that the program was there for them to win the award and get that ability to do that. And at the same time, I wish it didn't need to win an award to be that game that does that. And it was really standing out to me because you're like comparing it to Miramasa and Odin Sphere. And I'm like, wow, like that's very high praise. Mm. And it's also very much in that same sort of, you know, creative, art driven, but still great game mechanic game stuff. And I think that's another place that oftentimes, like, that's one of the disconnects we've seen, like, with games like Killer 7, which is a really creative Japanese game, but it sort of gone wrong because, like, the game mechanic piece isn't there, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes the game mechanic piece is there, and I don't know what I got a little bit off track there. Anyway, it just wraps up. So I don't think we should make it sound like Japan is the savior of these creative games. They just have their own take. I think Japan gets a write-off a little too easy sometimes. They create a few games like this, and then they sometimes get more praise than dozens of Western games released at the same time. We might be guilty of that right now, too, just because we're so worried about the
kind of rooting for the underdog.
Yeah. That's it. There's definitely, I would agree. That's a great way to put it. You just summed it. Well, I got nothing else to say. Yeah. There's definitely a rooting for the underdog mentality.
I think you can frame that as bias, or you can frame that as people who are fans of certain things are rooting for those things to do well and have a resurgence and, you know, and maintain their vitality and relevance. And, you know, I don't think it's about calling you out. I think, you know, you're a person who loves those kinds of games and wants them to stay vital. So
was that in the context of Sony promoting their indie stuff better than – was that part of that discussion that he's referring to? Because that's – I mean, that is true, I think, that, like, if that's the point that you were making earlier, is that Sony is better right now at promoting indies on their platform than
– Promoting indies or inviting indies to develop on their platform? Because I'm not sure that they're better at promoting. Because where are we now with the... So think about the indie titles that have come out over the summer on both platforms. Can you make an argument for one or the other platforms being better at getting those games noticed and purchased?
Not a salient one off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, I'm not... So I'm not...
It's just a gut feeling. Just...
There's definitely a gut feeling there. There's certainly
There are solid quality games on both platforms, though.
Absolutely.
Right. And you're right. I mean, I don't think that I can choose one or the other. If an indie came to you today and said, I have this really great game, But I have to choose one of the two major consoles to release on.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, we have heard bad stuff about Microsoft. Like, they don't update quickly. Look at Fez. I mean, Fez had that major game-breaking crash, yep. and they decided not to fix it. So I've definitely heard things about Microsoft.
Well, we've heard it, like, they're tough about enforcing rules such as, you need to pay us for the second update. And
but they do that because I think Xbox Live sells more indie games than PSN does. I mean, I think Papo EO is not going to sell quite as much as Fez did this year or any other big major Xbox Live indie releases that we've seen. So I don't know. I think it is kind of still a toss-up at this point. I can't really say one platform is really nailing.
And after all the anticipation, we sailed right through Sound Shapes.
Yeah.
And we sailed right through it. I think that another thing that is we've fallen into this summertime promotion schedule that is multi-week, game-a-week promotions. Right. So it is somewhat akin to the problem that happens in the iTunes store of, here's a new game, here's a new game, here's a new game, here's a new game. Here's a, like, what, there
what
was
about
a
the one
game.
That was 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, like, wait, there was something I wanted to play.
Well, and they come out so rapid fire, and they don't have the benefit of all the, oh, I know what Call of Duty is, or you know, they don't have that. You're like Dustin Elysian Tale, what?
And similarly.
You revealed that you haven't finished Diablo. I haven't played Journey yet.
Oh, dude, you gotta do it. I haven't
gotten
3 hours.
I haven't gotten to it. I have to download it. I know it's awesome.
I kind of wish I was you. You still have that ahead of you.
But here's what I'm saying is, like, there's just so much hitting. It's like boom, 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 boom. We gotta get it done.
Well, and then this is definitely in the indie space. The platform exclusivity thing really poses a problem, right? Because in addition to this staccato, you know, this really high fire, like 5 weeks of an indie game every week. They're all very creative.
A brilliant game, yeah.
Right? And then at the same time, I'm going to have PSN and Xbox Live lining up and saying, well, if you want to really get the good ones, you should get ones from us. So now it's like 10 games, but they're split across two platforms and they're coming out in a rapid bomb succession so that you wind up at the end, you know, 5 weeks later, there's the slew of good games that have come out and you are like, well, I missed whatever.
Well, and as an indie developer, you're like, oh, yes, please give us that, you know, exclusivity check.
Right.
On the other hand,
Give us the promotion.
Yeah. On the other hand, you're totally kneecapping yourself in terms of, we are an unknown developer that is trying to get our work out in front of as many people as possible. So you're kind of, you know, you're weighing that. Is the exposure better than the cash? A lot of times the cash weighs out, you know, wins out because people got to eat, you know. So it's like.
I think Polytron said because of the issues that they had getting the patch out for Fez, they're done with Xbox Live as a platform. Like, I think that there are
Polytron. Like, let's not. That's an irritating. They could have put up the money and put. Tough situation both around. What really should have happened is that Microsoft should have worked with them in good faith to reach an accord between the two of them. That, hey, yes, this game was successful, and oh crap, there was an issue with the save. Let's work together and hammer it out, and you know,
On that specific issue, that may not be the case, but I definitely think that Microsoft is trying to add value to Xbox as much as it possibly can.
Yes.
And because it's trying to do that, it's trying to lock devs down into its system so that it can, you know, you run the Xbox Live way, we're not going to bend over backwards for you.
I'm just saying, you know what? What I'm saying is, thinking about it, summer has been 3 months, and instead of bombing me for one, like, 5 week period where you're going to hit me with a game every week, do all 3 months and hit me with a game every 2 or 3 weeks. And then really celebrate each of those games and give them, you know, like a ton of time on the top door of the digital store and make sure that you're talking about them. I mean, Microsoft doesn't have a blog, but talk about them more on the PlayStation blog, because the PlayStation blog is pretty good leading up to launch. Like, they'll do, like, you know, preview and show the game and all that kind of stuff. And then after it comes out, that quickly sort of evaporates because they're on to the next one. Because, again, they got to get on the next one. Now they got to talk about, like they were talking about Sound Shapes, now we got to talk about Papo EO. And they talk about Papo EO, and next they got to talk about, like I guess there was earlier in that, they had Expendables 2.
I bet you the backlog of games that they have ready to roll out is mind-boggling. At least maybe not ones that are
done. We're not even in the holiday right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but just that list of, you know, this is going to be done here, this is going to be done. And they probably have, like, the next, whatever, 6 months sort of
mapped.
More or less mapped.
Yeah, Microsoft's Game Feast, I think they did announce at least the games that are coming, if not the exact dates. That's their new promotion in the fall to kind of kick out that.
Yeah.
So that's all Microsoft Game Feast. I'm sure Sony will have a bunch of releases then.
Did they announce it?
The games?
Yeah.
I don't know if I think they announced the games, but not the dates. So I think we know what's coming in it, but I don't know.
Let me try and pull that up here on the Googles while you guys continue to talk about that.
But there are going to be a lot of releases, what I'm saying, like even going forward. And it used to be that the summer was nothing at all. Like you had your big releases in the spring when school let out, and then you had your big releases in the fall when everyone was buying gifts. Then people started buying games in the summer, and then they're like, well, I guess we can sell games like Darksiders 2 in the summer or Red Dead Redemption or games like this. And that's why we sort of created this stretch where – and Microsoft's Block Party is the other thing, the Xbox Live Block thing that no one bought indie games in the middle of the summer except Xbox Live turned it into a block, and that's why it's so popular. So I don't know. I think you're right. There's too many games coming out, and that's not going to stop anytime soon.
We know another challenge that they face is trying to accumulate, and this is a, you know, one of those dirty problems of the internet, is trying to accumulate enough reviews also to get into Metacritic, because that's become such an important facet of trying to get into, you know, just organic search traffic, because evidently people read Google. Who knew? And that's a challenge. Like how would you propose to them to get back into the reviews better? By the way, I've got should I interrupt with the 2012 list?
Do you have it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We've got Hydrophobia.
Mm-hmm. That's terrible. People worked hard on that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, this is last year.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I was like, that came out already, right?
Yeah, yeah, it did.
Maybe they haven't announced it for this year yet.
Maybe they haven't announced it for this year.
I don't know. But there are going to be a lot of releases in that game feast for sure.
They did Super Meat Boy 2 years ago and Pinball FX.
Yeah. I mean, and those are
this year's doesn't appear to have been announced yet.
Quality games. But there's always, like, around that time, there's going to be a string of weekly Xbox Live releases. So.
So, yeah, I mean, but then again, so back to the review thing, is that plays into the same thing, isn't it? In addition to the problem of all those games coming out in such rapid fire succession, is you also need the outlets that do reviews to review those games if you want to get them attention, because frankly, they need the Metacritic, you know, coverage.
And the more reviews that they need over there, the less quality they're going to be overall. Like the more sites that are just kicking out reviews and not thinking seriously about what these games mean and what they, you know, what they really deserve, then the more issues you'll have. So it is a cycle that is repeating itself. And I don't know. I don't know that it'll get to a point where like everything crashes, but I do think that, you know,
it just keeps consuming itself is the problem.
Yeah.
And we have such high hopes for some of these games, and then
games get lost.
They get lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do get lost, which is a shame. And then a game like I come back to Sound Shapes, which to me was sadly a little bit of a disappointment, but also so dependent upon user generated content. Well, you've got to develop the game and get the game rolling to have people in there playing it, to play it all, to unlock all the stuff, to then be able to create stuff. And if none of those gears ever really get a chance to start churning, then it's sort of like you never gotten the car started, right?
Right.
And then you can't go anywhere. It's funny you should mention review quality, because we got into reviews some last week, and there was a ton of response in the official thread. And the most polar responses were from my SSSSS and MH Silver Counterjecting. But my SSS were like, this really blew me away, said, one thing matters and tells me all I need to know, score. Personally, I never click a review link on Shaq because there's no score, and anything you wrote is just a rehash of what has been written in your many previews of said game. None of this, how it made you feel or anything, helps. It's wasted time.
There was a great counterpoint in that thread. Go for it.
So to elaborate, because I want to talk about that point, because this is fascinating. I think there are other people, Mike's likes. Like,
I facepalmed. I literally facepalmed.
So he elaborates. But I think that his elaboration really drives home why people think like this. Video games are all the same. They lack variety, subtle differences aside. If I had 5 plates of chocolate chip cookies and put a score in front of each plate that represented the quality of the cookie, you could tell what was wrong with the cookies based on the score and know which one you would want to eat.
Do you want me to flip out on that kid? Because that's insane. Like, video games are all the same?
What do you do?
Yeah, if you want me to
pick a new hobby, kid.
Come on.
But it's that plate of chocolate chip cookies that applies to what we were just talking about with all these indie games. It's like we're putting a bunch of plates of chocolate chip cookies in front of you over the summer.
Here's exactly the – and we've already talked about this a little bit, but I reviewed Papo EO. I gave it 3.5. I was a little disappointed in that.
Done. You're done.
I know, but I was a little disappointed in that because there are really fascinating things about that game. I would say the relationship that it creates, 5 out of 5. Like, there are elements of that game that I think are really awesome and, you know, like I said, must – kill yourself if you don't check it out. No, what did we say?
Just kidding.
But what my point is, there are really great elements about that game. That score, I stand by it. I think it was, I think it had issues with it, and it wasn't, you know, the puzzles were a little weak, but I don't think that the score says everything that you need to know about that game.
Yeah, I don't think the score says anything. I do think this is a great time for me to announce my my cookie review site that I'm doing.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. What's it called?
Chocolate Choice.
Oh.
What's your
dude,
what's
how did you ever get that away from the porn stars?
Oh, no, it's cookies and porn.
What's your review scale?
We share the site. We 50-50. Yeah,
that's good. Oh, and that's in there, too.
Five out of five chocolate chips.
Five out of five, yeah.
Oh, or something.
So it's only the score is all you need to know. And
yeah. Hottest trending videos.
Did
right
people like, you said that got response. Did people like that comment or did they not?
No,
like
so there was
comment?
Great. Well, I apologize. First of all, I interrupted you. What were you trying to say about?
I'm pretty sure I was trying to make that joke.
That's all. You were holding that joke. Yeah. Really?
I don't remember, but it seems like something I would be doing.
I think that what's. I initially thought that maybe this was just like a, you know, like a satirical comment. And then I read the elaboration that was to a response further down, and I realized that, well, it wasn't satirical. It does reflect the way I think a number of people do look at games. And then you start to take that and extend it out into, like, we're talking about these indie games and how do they get attention, and how do we, like the bigger question it raises is, how do you break people out of the mindset of they're not just chocolate chip cookies? And
well, the problem is, I mean, I suppose
it's like saying they're all books, right? And judging all, well, they're all books, right? They all have words in them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's reductive.
They're all more or less the same.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, basically, and that's what this guy, this problem. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, what this guy's basically saying is, tell me if it sucks.
That's a good.
It's basically what he's saying. I want to know is, does it, because even a score, what he's doing in his head, I would suggest, is, oh, it sucks, or it's good. And wherever his mental place is for number equals sucks or number equals good, we, or I shouldn't even say we because I don't review things with numbers, but people who put numbers on reviews don't know. They don't know what your brain space says is good or bad on a number.
Right.
So 3.5 for you may be perfectly acceptable, and 3.5 for him, he's like, shit, that's shit. You know, so that is why it's so dangerous to go, all I need is a number, because it has no relevance without context. And so that's what the point of the review is,
right?
To give context.
Yeah. I'm sorry that the kid,
he might be
the guy, that guy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that, what's his name? Let me call him by his real name.
The one thing we know is that it's not a female.
My SSSS. Listen, my SSSS, I apologize for calling you a kid if you're not a kid.
I do too.
And I apologize for calling you a guy if you're not a guy.
I do too.
But I will say that please read the review and realize that you're not looking at a numerical score of the experience that you're going to have. You can't score an experience. I mean, you should make the choices of the games that you play on a ton of different things.
And I think we also hold responsibility for digging ourselves into a trench of people feeling this way, because look, one of the things that's written here, he says, is anything you wrote is just a rehash of what has been written in your many previews of said game. Now, that's not true about Shaq News reviews. It's not true about many reviews.
I don't think so, yeah.
It's not true about many reviews on other sites. However, we wrote ourselves into this corner by consistently writing what I've always called book report video game reviews. And you've seen them a million times.
What I did over my summer.
And you've seen them a million times on a ton of sites, and they are, here is this game, here is what it does, here's what the graphics, here is the score. And in that mentality, of course you go to the score, because, yeah, they're telling you, here's
all the component parts and what they're valued.
This is why I'm so angry then. And this is why, and I apologize again for anything I said that wasn't true, but this is why I am so frustrated, why I facepalm, why I was shaking my head, because I worked a long time, I worked a lot on making sure that text above that score is really insightful and really tells you and really expresses to you what I thought about that game.
But it's not as long as humanity worked on creating a number system.
If you come along and you look at the number and we walk away, that's an insult to me. And to say that, oh, well, the preview is exactly the same as a review, I don't think that's true. I mean, maybe there are sites where that is true, but not on my writing and not on the site that I work on.
Therein lies the problem, I think, that we collectively as a group of game media professionals over the last few decades have written ourselves into this corner, because we kept writing those and those reviews kept doing well in search and they kept getting promoted and the big sites kept pushing them up there because the perception was that was what people wanted. And yes, that necessarily led to just reduce it to the score, because you know what? You're not telling me anything. You're telling me back of the box stuff. You're giving me my what I did this summer sort of like prose, which is just throwaway stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, of course, I'm just going to go down to a couple of bullet points and the score. And we have to keep doing like the Mike Strams of the world. And
that's right.
And everybody else out there
play that music.
Them has to keep writing. You know, like real.
In America, at least I knew.
That's
I'm
right.
Free.
My reviews are completely free.
The same reason that we would read a critical review of a movie. Like, yes, there were some counterpoints. M. H. Silver said, "I'm the exact opposite. A score on its own without context is worthless. I completely ignore scores.
Thank
Their
you.
Only purpose is to give fanboys something to crow or bitch about." And then the other thing that we started to talk about, which I mean, maybe we'll skip to the other side of the break about this, is Cruel Legacy suggests that really what would be great is another evolution of the review process, which would be to have an ongoing dialogue over really big games.
Yeah.
And I think that that's well. I mean, I've been talking about that since one of
them. Didn't Engai and Totillo did that.
And they did that
fantastically well.
Super good.
Right. There's a podcast I listened to that just started doing a 1 week later segment where they sort of looked at a long view.
Do you
of
think that
the
could
game.
Work?
I don't know.
I better subscribe on iTunes.
So anyway, he says when Halo 4
I'm
comes
tell
out,
my
what
friends.
I really want to read is coverage that examines the subtleties of the sandbox, weapon balance, map design, you know, all these things that you start to learn as you play the game more. And you know what? I think that we can do that. We could do it right here on the show, and I think we should think about it and keep aware of that and not let games just go like, okay, we talked about this week. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Because we're promoting and doing exactly what we're saying is frustrating.
That's totally doable. All we need to do is just figure out what we're going to talk about a couple days in advance to form some thoughts.
Whoa, whoa. A couple days in advance.
I know.
Or keep playing a game and not feel like we have to just churn on to the next one.
Well, yeah.
You know what? I think that if each of us individually think about what happened in the past. Like, it would be like past each of us would. Never mind.
Oh, God.
They tried to hit that.
I was already
trying to
hit that. I was trying to follow
you. The audience has no idea what just happened. No.
So what you're saying is there was a box in the room upstairs that was put there before the box that was in this other. Oh, shit.
My
SSS, no way.
I apologize again. And if you have any response to that, you can send it to me, Mike Schramm, on Twitter.
All right. And we will take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will catch up with Puzzlecraft. We'll definitely do that.
Ew.
And then, you know, we'll bring it home because we're going to be talking about football anyway. We'll bring it home with some Madden discussion.
Yes. Yeah,
oh, yeah, there we go.
Fantasy football, and we'll close this sucker off. So stick around. We will be wrapping up Weekend Confirmed on the other side of this. Mellow vibes there, definitely. All right, so tell me about Mike Schramm tweets last week that Puzzlecraft might be your iOS game of the year.
It's in the running for iOS game of the year. It just came out. Chilingo released it. It's 99 cents on the App Store if you have an iPhone or an iPad. It is like the perfect mashup of just super chill puzzle game and town building. Sort of like good Farmville.
Yeah,
game.
I totally concur.
And you've been playing it too, right?
I have. Yeah, it's better than
Triple Town.
Triple Town
I
is
love
more.
Triple Town.
I think Triple Town's more like a traditional puzzle game. Like you have a round and you have to keep going. Puzzlecraft is like a town building game, so it's a huge progression level. Like, you build up a town and you build out houses and you build up
Hire workers,
different abilities. Like, yeah, it's almost an RPG town building type of experience. It's not an arcade like hit. It's a longer
speaking my language.
I know, it's good. It's very grindy. And if you ever played a game called Dungeon Raid, it's sort of the same match three type mechanic where you have to draw a line through things.
Uh-huh.
There's a farm and tiles will drop down on the farm, and some tiles are grain, some tiles are grass, some tiles or trees, and whichever one you match up, that goes into your resources, and so you build up those resources. Those resources can then be spent on creating houses, creating other buildings, creating different things in your town,
hiring workers,
doing different types of things, and then there's also a mine, and you can, like, to go down into the mine, you need to save up X amount of chickens, so you use the farm resources
as anyone would, or bread or food.
Yeah, you have to.
You need to eat something in the mine. So basically, you build up resources from the farm that let you go into the mine, and then you collect stone and iron and all these different resources in the mine, and those also let you build different things in the town. And it's
but all
so
the time
rewarding.
You're playing a match three game
to get these resources, and then you go back in the town, you make some strategic choices about where to put these resources and how to do them. And if you need more resources, you go back to the match three game and play that. And it's a cycle that's
only 99 cents. There's a little bit of depth.
It's only 99 cents.
You know, there's a little bit of depth to the match. It's not just match and match and match. I mean, you'll match stuff, and it'll give you, you know, special resources for matching like 8 or 10 of one thing in a row. You know, so you're.
I'm simplifying. It actually does get really complex. There's a lot to it, but it's a great casual puzzle game in that even though there's a lot of complexity there, you don't worry that much about it.
Like, right. So this is Puzzlecraft on iPhone we're talking about. Is it on iPad? Does it have
iPhone and iPad. Mm-hmm. And so I've been playing mostly on my iPad. I sit, I watch TV, I just play it like crazy. Like, it's one of those games where, and I love these games, where you can, it's basically turn-based, so you can, like, walk away from it in a second, in a second's notice. So, or it's like you can sit there and listen to a podcast while you play it, or you can watch TV or do something like that. It doesn't require your full attention, but it's entertaining enough that it will.
That's how I was with Triple Town, dude. I know. Was so addicted to that game for a period.
But here's the difference. So, Triple Town, you're managing just the puzzle piece because you're trying to get to pull, you're trying to get like pieces to pull together in an ever escalating
chain,
you know, to like build bigger and better things. This sounds a little different in that you're managing the resources outside of the puzzle piece.
Right. Triple Town is more like Tetris. There's just a game and you play it for as long as you can, and then you start over the game and you go back and do that again.
Yeah.
This is, and I hate to keep saying Farmville because it's actually not as bad as Farmville,
right,
but it's more long story. Like, it's more long form. Like, you actually are building up this overall town. You name your town at the beginning, Mike Town, and then you build up this overall town. And
wait, I have to name my town Mike Town? I don't want to name it Mike Town.
You can do Shram Town if you want.
Very generous of you.
How about Shramville?
Shramville is fine too.
Shrampton comes alive.
But it's a much more long form thing. And the individual, like when you go into the farm, the individual matches are kind of like Triple Town. Like, you mm-hmm. just play them. But instead of, you know, getting a score for that game and then moving on to the next game, that score becomes the resources that you spend in the rest of the town.
Do I get to like show my Shramville and compare with your Mike Town?
It's not social at all. No, it's not online. It's just your.
You're just building.
You're building up the experience.
Yeah, I think you can Facebook and tweet stuff, but that's about it.
Yeah, there's no worried about that.
Yeah, nobody is.
But it's really smart because, like, in Dungeon Raid, for example, you can get spells that sort of affect the board that you're playing mm-hmm. on. They affect the gems that fall down. In this one, you can get tools. Right. That will also, like, you can use. So the way it works is you're farming, so you have like 30 days to farm. So you have 30 turns, basically. They're somewhat timed.
Oh, that's one of the touches I really love is as you progress through your turns.
Oh yeah,
the stuff in that you're matching actually, like the trees will start to get a little snow, or it'll turn fall. So the grass icons will turn brown.
Yeah, it's like four seasons. So when you're at the beginning, it'll be nice spring time, and then you move through summer, and then fall, and then winter, and so you can actually see the icons change as you play, and it. We're in August, there's footballs in the air, and not in LA, but in other parts of the world, leaves are starting to change, and I like that fall feeling, so I'm excited about that. But it's a great, great game. We've promoted it way too much. It's just 99 cents, so go get it.
So the last thing I was going to ask is, so Puzzlecraft, it's 99 cents, but is it microtransaction also, or is it really like you buy it for 99 cents and that's that?
Well, it's the best kind of microtransaction in that if you want more money, you can go get it. I haven't spent
If you're basically buying time, like you're like, oh, I don't want to farm again. So I'll buy some gold instead of.
So if I just want to go play it, I can play it.
Yeah,
for 99 cents.
Oh, yeah,
I can't really argue.
Again,
with that.
We've talked too long because you should really have just
like 99 cents. Yeah. Not a big deal.
It's a dollar.
Speaking of football being in the air, Garnett Lee.
Well, before we go to that, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up to make sure we don't get past it, because that whole thing about it being 99 cents and going to play it, and how, you know, we like the whole idea being you just go play a game right away, was a big part of the juice that was supposed to make OnLive so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And as we learned, so we talked, well, it's supposed to be like whatever. That was supposed to be one of the big catches, right? You'd like you any game you wanted to, you could play for an hour, and it was just like wide open, and you could play it because it was like a full on demo. So last weekend, OnLive unceremoniously went through a
Undead.
It's still alive.
People lost their jobs, Josh. Yeah,
they didn't just lose their job. Actually, what happened there was pretty shitty to the people who had worked there. So.
I mean, I joked about the headline too, but for those they did lose their jobs and they lost everything invested in it. Go ahead.
A lot of times if you're working at a startup company, a big part of what you take in lieu of a higher salary is equity in the future of the company. And what happened when OnLive let everybody go and restructured itself on Friday was they killed all of that equity for all of those people who had been working on the project. So they went through a form of bankruptcy, and that's really crappy. Like, it's really crappy that all those folks who put their heart, you know, their labor and love and effort into making this thing, and part of what they were counting on was equity, was just wiped out so that the entity can continue and now give new people equity in what those guys worked on. So all these guys and gals worked on OnLive really hard, got to this point, their equity's wiped out so that someone can come in and save it and get equity in it even though they didn't work in it.
It's a shame that that's legal.
It's
it's sort of a loophole that they found in California law.
It's a weird loophole
they found, but it
really
is legal.
Cool. Well, it's totally legal. It's just not not
and
cool.
They're possibly still open for like lawsuits, because you could say at this point, like, there's a lot of rumors and everything, and so I don't want to repeat anything that's not true, but Steve Perlman is the CEO of OnLive, and a lot of the employees who left said that there were multiple opportunities for him to sell the company, like Gaikai sold to Sony, and he turned them down because he said, oh, we'll get more. So so there's, you know, if I'm not a lawyer and I have never taken a law class, but if Steve Perlman neglectfully made those decisions, and, you know, if he should have sold at any point, then the employees could technically say, well, you made this wrong decision. You are accountable for losing
more
this.
More than a few people have whispered to me that they didn't understand why it went this way completely, because there certainly was available money for them.
Yeah.
There certainly was money available for them to continue the entity as it was, although going this radical way seems to, I guess, benefit. I mean, well, hopefully it's not.
So all I'm saying is there were decisions in there.
It was messed
up. That could probably be second guessed and might be second guessed by a lawyer at some point.
And one of those decisions was how big they made the service.
Right.
So the big takeaway that came away that I want to talk about from a game, so that's enough about the business side. What came away from a gaming standpoint is, look, we've been getting all excited about cloud gaming and what could it mean for the future, et cetera, and so forth. And it came out that at their highest concurrent number of users, they were only hitting about 1,800 people on time online.
That was pretty shocking to me. Now, here's my question. Have you guys ever used it?
Nope.
I have.
Have I used it, or did I actually use it? I used it as a review test environment when I checked it out, but I never played it at home.
I've beaten about 5 games on it, so I've played it quite a bit. Have you played it on a game or just used it to play with it?
I played a game, but it was mostly to play. They sponsored my show, completely frank, and so I tested it out. And
okay, I mean, because it was really impressive service, and I really like it, and I've played through games on there, and the service was really cool. But yeah, if you had asked me before this all happened how many users they had, I don't know if I would have been able to guess concurrent, but I would have easily said 50,000.
So they claim they had something on the order, I guess, of a million.
Total.
But if only 1,800 people are playing at the same time at any given time, you don't need 8,000 servers.
Well, so that's their height. That's the highest 1,800.
And they had bought 8,000 servers.
So, Mike, why were you using it?
I like it because I have a Mac, and I like just running around with my Mac. So I like that for one reason. The other reason is There were a lot of deals because they were trying to get more and more people on it. There were a lot of cheap deals on there. So like Assassin's Creed 2, I picked it up on OnLive, played it all the way through and got it over there. There was never a time where I was like, this game's coming out and instead of going to the store, I'm going to buy it on OnLive. But there were times where like Ubisoft would have a sale and I would catch up on games or do something like that. So
I think they had a real perception problem. I think a lot of people assumed they needed that set-top box in order to use it, which you did not need at all.
No, it worked with any, it basically works with anything.
Yeah, anything, like on your iPad, on anything.
And people didn't believe that it worked. Like I would go to people's houses when I first started playing with it. I would go to people's houses and be like, "No, you don't understand. You download this app and I'll show you. I'll log into my account and I'll show you." And people are like, "Whatever, whatever." And then as soon as I pulled it up and started playing like Batman, they were like, "What? How is this happening? Like people just didn't take the time to go check it out. Now I hesitate to promote them too much and say that it's a cool service, even though the service ran very well, because the guys that are in charge of it now, I don't know that I really support their
and lest it go unsaid, it's not at a point, to me, at least from my experience, it wasn't at a point where it was the equivalent of playing the same game in the tray in my 360 or PS3 or on my PC. It was still like there were still some fidelity issues. There certainly were some lag issues. Keep in mind it's relying on not only your bandwidth but your ping time to your gateway staying solid and stable. So anytime you get like one of those little hiccups, you're going to be potentially encountering a game problem. And it really just doesn't. If you have a even pretty good PC, the apples to apples comparison of Assassin's Creed 2 played on your PC locally versus played on OnLive is going to be pretty dramatic.
True. Now, and we're even luckier because we live in LA and we're very close to one of the service centers that they had. If you live in the middle of nowhere, or if you're on like hotel Wi-Fi or something like that, I did try to play it on hotel Wi-Fi. That did not work. I also had the iPad app, which never came out to the public, but they gave me a copy to try it out and it worked really great. But for some reason, they could never get it past Apple's gate, so they never were able to release it to the public. So there were issues with their service. I definitely don't think it's perfect, and it's not, like I said, I never would have chosen it over another. If I could play something on the console, I wouldn't have done it.
That's the problem, and that's what hasn't changed, and that's why I'm curious what happens with this technology, because I think it is a cool and viable way eventually to do something, but for right now, you wouldn't have chosen it. And I wouldn't have chosen it. And I'm not sure it's, and I'm not saying it's just a bandwidth thing. It's quality of presentation. It's the whole package. And, you know, I mean, there's a couple stories I read. Maybe it was on Ars or someplace that they were saying that like a lot of the blades that they had bought to run games on weren't even really that cutting edge.
Yeah.
So like,
well, I mean,
that's going to hurt them.
They should move the whole operation to
Kansas City. I was just thinking that,
you know, Google Fiber, like, I mean, you got that crazy broadband infrastructure. Like that's just.
But I can also
now the service is still up too. Like,
oh yeah,
it's not,
the service
we're talking
is fine.
About like
it's
the company's closed, and the service is still going and still running. I think that what we're going to have to do is, you know, either it's going to be Sony and Gaikai, or it'll be someone who has a better knowledge of how to run a service like
Sony and Gaikai is very interesting to me. And then, but in the futurist idea, what's really interesting to me is the way we continue to see computer technology, you know, following Moore's law and doubling merrily along the potential for what a remote server farm's computing potential could be in 4 or 5 years and how that could make this really, really work is interesting.
What if I had told you in 2000, you can choose any movie you want, it'll stream to you. You're like, mine connection would never handle that. Now we have Netflix. Like, yeah. I still think that the possibility is going to happen out there. I still think that it's.
And I think that connectivity will come up to speed. I think though that we do need, you know, that like some more efficiencies in computing. It, like, what would be the catch is when a new Batman came out, and if I played it on a cloud service, it looked 10 times more incredible than it would look on anything I had at home because hardware it's running on at that server farm is so far ridiculously removed from something I'd buy that I could never buy it.
Yeah.
And then it's really cool because then the promise of just delivering me the video component and me sending back the control inputs becomes cool. But if you're just going to deliver me basically what I could get or less than that experience at home, then I don't have any use for it.
Well, and don't forget, before we move on to Madden, but don't forget, the reason OnLive did this thing is because they have a lot of patents and a lot of technology that they've designed that are they're happy to sell, I'm sure, to someone else. So if someone comes along who does know how to handle servers like this and does know how to handle capacity and does have like the user base to do that, like Netflix or a company that is already interested in and experienced at doing cloud thing, I don't think it's too far off. And especially when you're talking not so much about computers like desktop computers, because those will always be powerful. They're just getting cheaper along with everything else. But that iPad you have sitting on the right on the table right there, like those are the types of computers where you will have, you know, hardware servers that are, you know, factors more powerful than the little
great
tablet
gateway
that you're carrying around. Yeah. I mean, iPad's getting more and more possible, but you know, the Android tablets are much weaker and much slower.
Well, and then when I can use this as a conduit through which to play the game, but also through AirPlay projected up on my OLED,
iPad, shoot
on my OLED television,
high screen
then
television,
then suddenly I've got a really cool way to play a distributed computing game. Anyway, I love football.
Yeah,
I love football.
Wait, that's Fox. That's not.
You can tell that the based on the weather here that it's actually time for football, but it is.
No, you sure can't tell it is. I love football, and here's the thing with Madden. Last year was probably the most telling of this experience. I always want to play Madden throughout the season. I joined up with the awesome fourth string leagues last
year. You loved that.
It was really fun, and the game was so frustrating still to play that it just was not possible to stick in there with it. And I was trying to use those mechanisms to keep me coming back to it. I can very truthfully say, having played about 10 full games of Madden since I've had a review copy, that I want to play more of this game. I want to play more of this game a lot.
Okay. So what has changed?
So the big thing about this game, and I think it's been really publicized quite a bit, so it's not any surprise, is that they moved it over to the physics engine finally. And that, you know, the physics engine was what changed the world for FIFA. They put that engine in FIFA a couple of years ago, and since then everyone's been clamoring for putting it in Madden, and they finally put it in Madden. And it is everything I think that a football fan had hoped for, in that instead of playing a game that is trying to make it look like you're playing a real game, you're just playing the game and it's playing the game. And let me explain the difference.
You should write that down. That's a good headline.
Yeah, that's really going to work very well.
Playing the game and it's playing the game. Go on.
Right.
It's in the game.
And that's a great way to put it. So Madden, so EA was about...
Wait, someone call EA.
Remember, EA
I got
was
an all, idea for them.
Let me tell you where I'm going with that. EA was always about it's in the game. And there was always like that snapshot of something happening in the real game. And then they're like, oh, that's in the game. And for prior versions of Madden, they always had to go in and make animations to make that happen in the game. So it's like, oh, here's a receiver doing a tiptoe on the sidelines, and now we have to animate a receiver.
It's a trigger. It's a series of triggers.
Exactly. And so
this is not triggers.
Every time you're playing the game, it's like, this happens, okay, and the simulation decides, here's the set of animations to fire off. And it's not doing any of that anymore.
So now you might say you're playing with power.
Yes.
Awesome.
I might say I was playing with power.
So is it really
it's
that?
Thinking.
It's
thinking.
These are all really good, you guys.
Wow, you guys.
Is it really that fluid? Like, does it really?
It really is. It's really
like
fucking
that?
Cool. Like, right. It especially, like, don't get me wrong, outside of the game, they still have a long way to go to get things where I want them. But on the game field, for instance, I played like 10 games of this game, and every single interception that I've thrown, this is big to me, every single interception I've thrown, I owned. I have not yet like thrown the controller or even just been pissed off. Every time I've thrown an interception, I was like, yep, that was me, yep.
Wow.
And it used to be...
That's pretty impressive,
it used to
actually,
be like within,
I remember a lot of
within one or two, you're like, it's just like, oh, like, come on, give me a freaking break. And the thing that's changing is now I'm playing quarterback and I'm loving it because...
He's loving it.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. See, you put
wait a minute.
That one, right?
That's more for like a food one, though. We should talk to the food guys about that.
I think it works.
I bet Garnett has... while he's playing, he has some food, and he probably has folks and fun while he's playing it.
What kind of food do you like? Cheap food? Like a fast food place?
Oh my god.
Oh, what
you guys
a
are
feeling.
The ultimate derail.
You guys keep going like this. I'm gonna have to run for the border.
Anyway,
so you like men?
Is the challenge is still there though? Is it tough?
Well, actually, it changes the challenge. That's what I say. Tough? Is I think that like among other things, I'm gonna have to like think about throwing the ball away. I would bet that somewhere between 60% and 70% of the interceptions that I've thrown so far are plays where I get back in the pocket and I didn't read the defense quite right at the line. And so I look to my first guy and I'm like, oh, that was a mistake. He's not even remotely open. I look to my second guy and he's not there. So I swing back to my third and I already figure, oh, well, obviously one and two are tight. So three's got to be open. And I like just give it a millisecond glance. And if it looks like it's open, I hurl the ball that direction. And he like, no, because now there might be something there and you're actually making it down to that third read and you have to think about like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be throwing that ball. And it starts to really get a higher appreciation for like, it's really hard to play quarterback. It's really hard to like come up to the line, read the line, read the defenses. You know, part of what they've brought in is this idea of facing. So you can definitely get a situation where if you get a receiver running past a defender and the defender is turned the wrong way, you can fit a ball in there because they don't have that magic awareness anymore. Mm-hmm. If the ball goes behind their head, it goes behind their head. Right. And they don't have a magic ability to suddenly make a play somehow on it.
Wow.
And with physics being in there, I'm finding even though the logic up front on the line is still questionable. I mean, there's still places where you see guys not make quite the right reads. What is a lot easier to tell is the way they're locking up with each other. Because instead of it just being animations, you really get a sense of the momentum of the way blockers are moving or not moving guys out of the way and where the holes are going to be to read where to run in behind them. Hmm. And that makes a big difference in the running game. That's I'm finding awesome. A lot of ability to get like 2 to 7 yard plays out of plays that would have either been stopped or just gone for ridiculous yardage before.
That was the big thing that you talked about last year, I remember, wanting that sort of
so I think all that stuff's great.
Situation. Yeah.
The stuff on the ground in the game is, I mean, look, they rebooted the system. They finally did what, honestly, they probably should have done at least 2 years ago, and how FIFA became the lead bed for the physics system, I don't know. I mean, this is what next-gen football should have been eons ago. And now they have a task ahead of them of doing the entire rest of the package because the rest of the package is still...
Hmm. Yeah. So what's the sort of time to fresh game of football once you boot the thing up? Like, oh, I want to play a season.
Well, you know, this is like something I was actually... I've been having an exchange back and forth with one of their community guys about this. It's like... They overcomplicate things so badly. If you're a fan of your favorite football team, you want to hop in and play with your favorite football team. You probably want to play a season with them. And they still have like this crazy, like now they have this giant, what looks like part of a Monopoly board when you log in, that's got all these boxes with different things you can do in the game. And of course, one of them is a quick match, which is like the dumbest thing in the world. They have quick match, but the standard way of playing the game is you jump in and then you pick teams to play against. They don't give you like... They don't prompt you with like a cool matchup or something would be fun to play. There's no like, hey, I'm a Cowboys fan and I hop in. Why doesn't it just say, hey, you're a Cowboys fan. Tonight's matchup is you against the Eagles, or tonight's matchup is you against the Washington Redskins, or whatever it is, right? Yeah. Like all this kind of thing. It's like, oh, I can put the cursor on the other team and move it over to the Redskins, and then I get to pick this and do that. Like unnecessary. And then to do a season, now you have to go through connected careers, which means that, yes, you can do a season, you have to set up a connected career, play it as a coach, set all the settings for your sim, and then of course you can let the computer sim all those things, but every time you want to advance you have to let it sim all those things. It's like, I don't want to do that. I just want to hop in and play a game of football with my guys. Mm-hmm. Like I don't get why they need all that extra. And then I tell you one thing also that I do love as well is Chris Collinsworth is gone.
Yay. Yay.
It's Jim Nantz and Phil Sims, and yeah, they still...
Oh, that's way worse.
You don't like them?
I fucking hate Phil Sims. He is the worst color man on the planet.
I disagree.
I apologize to Phil Sims' family. It's true.
I'm, you're going to laugh because I think he's the second worst next to Chris Collinsworth.
Dude, I'll take Collinsworth over Phil
really?
Smith any day of the week.
And this is like as much as Sim what he's doing, the Cowboys.
What he's doing is throwing the ball. He's fucking hate him. Listen to him. He talks like that constantly. What he's doing? He's throwing. Oh, shoot me in the
anyway,
face, Phil Smith.
What's he doing? What's he doing again, Jim?
He's throwing.
They're trying to get
he's gotta
there.
Gotta be running.
They're
look
making
at him.
Some strides.
Look at him. He's gonna get him. He's gonna get him.
Word.
Fucking hate him. Anyway, go ahead.
You just ruined it for everyone playing Madden this year.
Good.
They will now hear that.
Good. Maybe there'll be a revolt and they'll
and
yank
they'll remember him. Your annoying impression.
Get him. Throw him the ball. He's running. You gotta throw him the ball. I hate him. And he says the most inane, stupid shit too.
So anyway, they're trying
finding good success. Like there's other kinds of success, Phil Sims, than good success. There's bad success.
Well,
I hate you in the face.
I don't know.
Chris Collinsworth is out, huh?
Jeff, will you play Madden so we can actually talk about the game next week?
Because this has
been
muted.
This has been completely off the rails.
No, Garnet, you don't understand. Guild Wars 2 comes out next week, so my game time has been spoken for. I apologize. And that's what I will be doing. I will be playing Guild Wars 2. Get him.
Would you like to take us to finishing moves?
I think I just did.
Finishing moves.
All right, Phil Sims, finish them.
All right, we've had a lot of laughs today.
Jesus.
But I'm going to take it down to a serious
few tears.
I want to take it to a serious place in all honesty. Tony Scott passed away this week. Okay. Very sad. Very sad. We this coming week on Totally Rad Show, we have a Tony Scott retrospective episode that I think is going to be really cool. I think if anybody played the latest Max Payne, you realize what an impact Tony Scott had on not just films, but all media. Basically, that last Max Payne is as if Tony Scott directed it.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that really impacted our generation, my generation, my life, a lot of the biggest films of my childhood, and really, the visual style of the era that I grew up in is dictated by this daring filmmaker. And it's really sad what happened to him, but, I hope people check out our episode next week. I'll use it. I mean, it's sad, but I'll use it as a plug. I think it's a really good episode and a fun celebration of what he brought. And it's really sad. And I know it was maybe a jarring transition to go from laughing and stuff to that. But I didn't want to let the week go by without because it is a video game topic. You know, he really, you know, Top Gun, for example, the action in that, I think, has influenced lots of video games. And there's numerous visual styles that you see now across all media.
So. I was a big fan of his. What do you have a personal favorite film?
Crimson Tide is my
favorite
of his.
I'm a true romance guy.
There's, I mean, you could just rattle him off.
He's amazing.
It's amazing. It's so sad that we will never have another Tony Scott film.
Agreed.
Well, that was
heavy. Sorry to bring down the room.
It's all right.
I just, you know, wanted to use my time.
Mike?
I will say too, if anyone, I don't know, you know, you don't want to bring down too much, but if anyone thinks about, you know, if you're sitting at home and you're thinking about doing something like that, or in a situation that he was in, don't do that yourself. Get some help and get some help doing that. I will also say thank you very much for everyone who reads my reviews instead of just the scores. Read the entire review.
There's your finishing move right there.
Don't just read the score. Also, youtube.com/incrediblepodcast. Go check out our new channel. Thank you.
Excellent. My finishing move. Wow, this is going to seem really trite.
No, I apologize. I didn't mean to.
Should have gone last, Jeff. But so I just want to give a shout out to another iOS title I've been having a lot of fun with called Jack Lumber.
Good stuff.
Yeah. It's Alchemy Labs. They're the guys that did Snuggle Truck or Smuggle Truck if you played the Android version. And it's basically like the next evolution of Fruit Ninja. A tree has killed your grandma and you're pissed off. And so you got to chop up logs.
That's pretty
I mean, there's a whole bunch of different logs and stuff. It's not just straight up like flailing around. There's actually strategy, and
it's like Fruit Ninja Matrix style, though.
Yeah, basically
like it freezes in the air. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I'm also going to point out something cool. Our friends over at Rodeo Games, who made Hunters and Hunters 2.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Hunters 2, one of those games that may have slipped past you if you're looking for a really detailed, awesome turn-based strategy game on the iPad that really has some fantastic graphics and a great combat system, Hunters 2.
Very good, yeah.
They just released something. What did they just release?
So they just announced that they're going to be using that engine to create a Warhammer Quest game.
Oh, yes.
Which is due out in the first part of 2013.
Can't wait.
Based on the caliber of visuals alone that they can do in that engine, plus how good a turn-based combat system they come up with, I think that getting the Warhammer license for this, it's going to be really cool. I think it could be a really, really, really cool, meaty fantasy action, well, fantasy tactical role-playing game.
For the Emperor, too. Yeah.
For the Emperor!
For the Emperor!
All right, folks, there you go. You guys already got in your plugs, so totally rad show next week. Tony Scott tribute, which should
lots
be excellent.
Lots of other
stuff,
too.
Lots to look forward to.
Lawless and other things.
And, of course, Mike Schramm, we know how to catch up on his podcast.
Yeah,
anything
you
else?
Can check out my podcast or follow me on Twitter. It's just Mike Schramm is my name.
Jeff Mattis, anything coming up interesting on the sites or anything? Pay attention.
Nothing that I think I can talk about, but I should have some pretty cool preview stuff coming out. Interview coming out.
Oh
next
yeah, you mentioned
actually,
something. I, that I'm really like excited.
I do have an interview with the guys that are developing an indie game called Routine coming out really soon. And if you haven't checked out the trailer for that,
I highly recommend
it.
That trailer looks awesome.
Yeah. I'm excited. Awesome. I haven't
seen
it.
It's a roguelike survival horror on the moon.
Yeah.
Nice. So,
yeah, very cool looking. All right, and fantasy football weekend confirmed style coming up. We have one league up. I think we're going to see if we can pull together a second league as well. And then starting, we're going to miss the first two tailgates. You're going to miss the first two tailgates. Yeah, and my birthday. So
I'm an asshole.
You're just missing it all, Jeff Cannata. But Jeff Cannata is in our leagues. You can take he and I on in the Weekend Confirmed NFL. Hopefully, we'll be able to follow it. We'll keep up with it. We'll have little updates.
The first two tailgates, I will be emailing in my picks.
Okay.
I will not miss out on the picks.
We will not record them properly and ridicule you at later time. However, you can participate. All right. And thanks to the fine folks here at the Atlantis Group in the booth and Del Rio and everybody out there who listens to us every week. Thanks so much. That is it. That's your Weekend Confirmed. And we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink. 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 Champagne. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all, yeah. I need a drink, absolutely. I need a drink this night. I need a drink in the sea. I need a drink in the time. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all, yeah.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew only know four.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.